Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, Rotten Tomatoes gets wise on user reviews. We'll share our thoughts on this year's Oscar ceremony, what they did wrong and right this year, and we'll roll right into a movie battle royale where we decide which of the best picture winners for the first decade of this century was truly the greatest film of the aughts. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, I really enjoyed the way you said aughts. It's like it was like your Jason Statham there for a second. It's aughts.
That's my aughts.
So dumb. No, nobody's getting excited by that. Definitely not women. Yeah. And to prove that, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello. Yeah, nobody's excited. Keep your pants on.
No, oh, Jesus. I plan on it. And also joining us this week, he's guest starred on a couple episodes, many episodes, Scott Calgaro.
Did you guys catch that guest starred? I like that.
Do you feel like you're
should have your own guest starred
IMDb title page?
Yeah, it's like we're a TV show.
Hi, guys.
Hi. What's up?
Mike Works. Howdy Doody showed up.
How's it going?
It's going well, Aaron. Thank you for inviting me on this week.
You're welcome. Well, this might be huge news, and this actually came in like right before the show, and it kind of got me sad a little bit. Many other people, not so much. But Samsung confirmed that they will no longer introduce new Blu-ray or 4K Blu-ray player models to the U.S. market, seeing as they account for 37% of that market. You think that's right in the wall, John? You think that means that we're all moving digital and this is the end? I should take those discs and just start throwing them out the window or what?
Well, definitely don't go throwing them out the window because these consoles will probably still have the players in them. I think that's one of the reasons why they're having troubles, because buying a UHD or Ultra HD console versus buying a player, like, you get so much more out of buying the console, right? For next to the same amount of money?
I can get a Blu-ray player for like $50.
I was going to say, I don't think they're $400.
Well, like the 4K Blu-ray players?
Well, I write 4K on it. Does that count? I mean, I actually like Sharpie right on the side.
No.
It looks the same. No. I can't tell the difference.
That explains your movie collection. Thank you.
Yeah. It's all Dumbo, Dumbo 2, Dumbo 3.
Is there a
There's a lot of cases that say definitely not porn.
Right.
No,
that's a whole shelf, man.
Yeah, it sure does.
He used to have a whole cabinet that was just VHS tapes, and I'm sure that's what they all were.
They all said Night Court, but really, yeah. It's more like Night Court.
Moonlighting. Who's doing the mooning here? Or the lighting?
Bull Shannon was Ball Shannon.
Okie dokie. So, seriously, like, what do you guys think of this? I mean, in terms of, are you worried about this, or do you actually want to go digital?
I have this fight with my wife all the time, because she's big on discs, and I'm big on digital. And she thinks that when the zombie apocalypse hits, all those digital movies are just going to disappear, and she wants to be able to watch her discs.
And she's right, because only a couple months ago, iTunes started deleting movies off of people's accounts because they didn't download them.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's because iTunes sits there and they go, you don't need it. Bye.
Well, I mean, it sounds a lot like that, but what they're really saying is, sorry, we can't pay for the rights anymore, and, you know, we can't keep it on here, so you have to download this stuff. So, unless you're going to spend the time to download each individual movie you buy, then yeah, she's right. Unless they're going to change some of the rules for these digital distributions, it's time to really consider and be very careful as to what you decide to buy on digital and what you need to buy hard media for. I stick to hard media for anything that I absolutely love. Digital is stuff that I can lose on accident or, you know, go down the tube somewhere.
Do you know streaming accounts for $24 billion in DVD and Blu-ray and all that is only $4 billion? I had no idea it was that big of a difference.
That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty nuts, man.
That's huge.
That is crazy. The few that I've bought for myself digitally, I got off Amazon Prime. So I haven't had to deal with the shenanigans from iTunes.
Until Amazon Prime decides to do that too.
Shenanigans?
No, it's not going to be a decide. It'll eventually happen. It's just that iTunes was the one that caught the heat first. Thankfully, because iTunes deserves it.
iTunes?
I'm sorry, I went all Trump and slurred my words together.
Oof. All right. Well, due to...
Hold on. Can I say what I think?
Are you raising your hand?
Well, you were moving along.
No, we assume women don't buy DVDs, right?
No, I purchased quite a collection.
I can tell you my wife doesn't. I have to buy them.
Well, that's because you're in a marriage. I'm not. I'm solo, independent. Woohoo. Anyway,
you need to find you a man so that they can buy all your Blu-rays, because apparently that's still the way.
Yeah, I do need that.
What happened to chivalry and like equal opportunity and stuff?
Is that really what chivalry is?
Where's Chris Evans when we need him?
Right?
Seriously. We are going
to
talk
about that. He would walk Regina King up to the Oscars, and he'll also allow her to buy her own damn Blu-rays.
I think he would buy her the Blu-rays for her.
That's so old. That's so old school. I don't understand it.
So
I'm sorry, you had a point before I got all 1956 on you.
Not only is it that your digital may just disappear, but am I the only person who I like to look at my movies to decide what I want to watch when I'm in the mood for rewatching a film? Because if I look at a digital, just looking at the case, I guess, or the title of it isn't as enticing to me.
What do you mean?
I would rather be able to look at my collection right in front of my face and say, you know what, scanning through, I think I want to watch Boyhood or something, versus having to go through my digital library. It's just not as appealing, and it's super lazy. And then I'm like, well, I'll just go on Netflix.
I do the exact same thing, no matter if it's physical or digital. I just keep scrolling and never pick anything. And then I go to Netflix and pick something I will continue watching, and I've already seen it 8 times.
Would you like to rewatch Breaking Bad? Why, yes, I do.
Let's start from the beginning, Bob. Let's do this thing.
See, but with discs, you got to get out of your chair and go to the disc player and put the disc in. I can just sit in my recliner with my big fat ass not moving and screen through all my movies digitally because I'm lazy.
That's too lazy. I'm lazy. I don't need to be that lazy. I need some sort of encouragement to get at least 8 steps in a day. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
I want to go back to what Amanda was describing, because it sounded like she's describing like a list of movie names as opposed to being able to see the actual pictures. Most digital carrier services allow you to see the pictures. Like they show up and you have a whole lot of movie posters that you can just scroll through. It's almost more fun to do that than it is to look at the physical media, because over time, like my Harry Potter collection, the images on my Harry Potter collection have changed 3 different times every couple of years because of the different artwork they release for those editions that I bought.
That feels like a very John answer. The art on this makes me want to continue to buy digital media.
Well, to be fair, it was John who answered.
Well, I know.
So therefore...
But also, I wasn't saying that you don't get pictures when you're in your digital library, because I do have a small collection and they all have pictures, but it's just not the same. It's the same concept for me of going up to my library shelf and it's my mini Blockbuster. I get to pick out which movie I want to check out today, and I actually have to physically get up and I'm like, you know what, which one feels appealing to me? And then I can take it out of its super cool steelbook case and look at it and see what else there is. Plus, you don't get the same special features a lot of times with the digital media that you do on a Blu-ray.
Yes, you do.
Not
always. Not always. I've got tons of stuff.
I just bought Into the Spider-Verse and it came with all the bonus features. So it came with, on digital, I bought it and it has like all the different bonus features on it.
But that's one reference point.
Seriously. Especially TV
shows.
You know,
I saw one, therefore they're all like that.
No, I didn't say all of them, but what I will say is that you can buy the movie plus bonus features as a choice. They'll have you just the movie or the movie and the bonus features. It is something you can do. At least my experience with Microsoft Movies or Microsoft Video, that's the way it is.
Not always. Most of the time, I think you can, but not always, especially with TV shows. TV shows, you don't always have the option for the extra features.
You never get commentary.
But it sounds like you agree with me.
Commentaries are rarely on the digital features, and that's a big, big thing for me. I love the comments, right, especially on TVs, man. I don't have anything, for the most part, that's digital, that's TV, that I actually have the commentaries for, except on iTunes. I have Game of Thrones somehow. I figured out a way to have my season collections on both. What is it? I have it on Vudu and I have it on iTunes, but the commentaries are only on iTunes. They're not on Vudu.
Stupid.
I could be doing it wrong. That's very possible, but I won't admit to it.
Like you would ever admit to being
exactly
wrong.
Exactly. I just don't see the point of that. That just seems like a waste of my time.
You said that before I did.
There's a whole lot of pot and kettle in this room.
Everybody
right now
listening is like, yeah.
Again, pot and the kettle.
Hi.
Yeah.
Which one are you?
Two review bombers, aka people that negatively review a movie just because they have nothing better to do. Rotten Tomatoes have banned user reviews and comments until a film officially releases. Finally, I don't even know why you could do it before, but whatever. And also, the want to see option will now be a total number instead of a percentage. I'm kind of surprised, I'll be honest, but also relieved because they did allow it to. Why did they allow it to begin with? I don't know.
It was probably just something they didn't. There was an oversight, likely.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a really big oversight that you would allow reviews for a movie before it's released. I have absolutely no problem with this. Rotten Tomatoes has become too much of a let's bomb the movie we don't like with negative reviews before it's even been released kind of thing. And it drives down ticket sales. It drives down movie rentals.
Does it really, though?
I think it does.
I don't think so.
I have no problem with this whatsoever. They should lock all that down until the day it's released.
The Last Jedi still did just fine. I mean, it wasn't hurt. And Captain Marvel is going to do just fine. Doesn't matter how many inclusive writers Brie Larson requires. They're going to do just, which, by the way, if people don't know, that's why some of them are bombing them, because she demands inclusivity. And apparently some people are mad about that or something. I don't know. Vaginas and brown people scare some people. I don't understand, but whatever.
You have to understand the way I am. I absolutely hate troll behavior. So anything that like enables the trolls to come out of their dungeons and be stupid, I hate. So I'm all good with this.
I'm fine if they don't want to see a movie because they don't like Brie Larson or they don't like somebody, Sam Jackson or somebody. I don't care about that. Like I legitimately don't care about that. That doesn't bother me at all. That's your right to say that. It's more of you're going to write a review for a movie you haven't seen. That's what I don't like. I really don't care about the other aspect of it.
I kind of wonder if it was, I'm sure.
I mean, I care about it. I'm just saying, like, it's your right to be an idiot.
So what I'm thinking that part of the reason they started to change this is because I bet you before they were very, very narrow on who would be considered a critic. And so a lot of those people who were critics, like Aaron before he got approved, has been writing reviews for like a decade plus, but was not listed under the critic category until last year. And he would have been under the audience score. So he would have been able to sometimes those critics have access to screeners of these movies, albeit probably not the big, big ones unless they're listed as a film critic. But they were very, very limited on who they were accepting as film critics. And it seems
there's film festivals and premieres and stuff. Yeah.
And so I think they've expanded their openings for who they're going to include into film critics and included more people to review those critics and like their profiles and everything. And so I think with those changes, now they're able to say, well, now that we're getting some of those people out of the audience and into the film critic category for reviews, now we need to kind of shut that down a little bit more.
I mean, that makes sense. I don't know what happened. I don't know why they're so mad. And it seems like, you know, it's Star Wars and then it's Brie Larson. And it's just people that get mad and they have nothing better to do but go on the internet and bomb other movies. But that could be the reason. Whatever the reason, they're stopping it.
And thank God.
I really believe unless you are, and I'm not because I am one. I'm just saying I don't think unless you are a critic and you actually are reviewing it in a critical manner, wait until the movie's released. Then I guess bomb it or say whatever you got to say about it. Then it's not really changing anybody's point of view. It just means you can't do it right. You can't do it early.
And I wonder
because you know they didn't all see that movie. You know it because Captain Marvel isn't out yet.
Well,
Brie Larson hasn't even seen it.
If some people are getting that by illegal means, watching the movie before it's actually released in theaters, because that does happen, let's be honest, people know how to do it. And so with those, maybe it's a way to deter bootlegging, too, from being accepted as a score review.
They're doing it 100% because of the bombing reviews. I don't think it has anything to do with bootlegging.
Could have been a topic of conversation.
I'm sorry. Well, no, I do, because the Rotten Tomatoes wrote a whole editorial on it, and they said...
But that could have been part of their meeting minutes.
They could have lied. You're right.
They could have presented it, and it just wasn't one of the most notable
things.
Right.
You're right. I'm not allowed to say something that's fact, because we don't want to offend somebody else's opinion.
It's getting heated in here, John. I think you need to speak up.
John fell asleep, by the way, about 5
John
minutes.
John left. John's not here anymore.
There's not enough left for me to talk about on this. They're gone. Yay, they closed it down. What else could we possibly say but beat this dead horse down completely?
All right, well, speaking of beating a dead horse, let's talk about some sequels and stuff that's coming up. A Quiet Place 2 is coming. I believe they're calling it the movie. On 5/5, that's the joke.
I liked mine better.
I like that, though.
What was your... You like that title?
I do. Actually, that works.
The movie.
I want to see two tickets, please.
Mine was A Quieter Place.
That would just confuse me.
Look, I posted that on the Ho, and somebody else directly stole that as one of their comments trying to be clever. And I was like, I literally posted that.
What about The Quietest Place?
Can we really just...
That's the third one.
No, let's go back to where Amanda's referencing comments she makes on Facebook as conversation points.
It was part of
A Quiet Place Facebook 2 page. Is coming May 15th, 2020. Kong versus Godzilla has moved up 2 months to March 13th, 2020 to avoid competing with the May 22nd release of Fast and Furious 9. Why are you... and you don't like that?
No, I'm just so excited.
That's your excited voice?
Yeah, no, you didn't see his face. That's the difference.
Oh, so it was like,
No, it was a lot more,
It was exactly how you responded when you unzipped your pants earlier.
And now I'm just...
Well, that went somewhere. All right, Escape Room 2 is... That just made my voice peak. Escape Room 2 is happening and dated for April 2020. The Greatest Showman is reportedly working on a sequel currently. The Deadwood movie...
What?
Yeah.
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 What's it going to be? Like, let's beat up the freaking circus freaks?
Wow.
That was the first one.
Why did you go so dark, man? Maybe this time they're going to tell the real story of P.T. Barnum. I don't know.
Yeah, we're like, circus, get out there, circus freak. Go ahead, you stupid pinhead. Let's do this. Eat the chicken.
But he'll sing a song and he'll learn a lesson. It's okay. The Deadwood movie will arrive this spring on HBO, so finally people will have a conclusion in that series if you're a fan of it. And lastly, The Haunting of Hill House is coming in 2020 and is now officially an anthology series, as the new season will be called The Haunting of Bly Manor. Following Henry James' novella, The Turn of the Screw this time, the story will seem to revolve around an Essex country house and a governess who has been hired to look after a pair of siblings. Her work gets severely complicated by the apparent existence of several ghosts around the manor, as well as the grip they may have over the children. James shadows his narrative in doubt, ambiguous as to whether these spirits are real or simply apparitions in the governess's head. If you saw the movie The Others, that's inspired by that film.
Also, there's one called Ghost Story, which I would definitely recommend.
From 1983?
I don't know. It's much more recent. It's like 2008 or something.
Oh,
well, it's Ghost Story, and I think it's like colon Turn of the Screw or something. But that one is a pretty good representation of what the book is and how the actual storytelling operates. So if you're not familiar, because the book is small, but it's really dense. So if you're not interested in reading it, although I would recommend it, Ghost Story is a good place to start, where it's a good film, kind of gives you a little bit of scare, and also gives you a really good idea of what the story is meant to be.
Sounds good to me. I like the original Haunting of Hill House. I actually haven't seen the last episode yet.
What? Which is, what?
I know.
What?
Have you seen the other nine?
Get out.
Yes. I've seen everything up to the last one. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. So
leave this podcast and go watch it. It's imperative.
So you should anyway, be. Seriously, you should be sorry.
I like the fact that they're doing a sequel and it's going to be a whole new story. I liked The Others when I saw it, so I'm interested.
Yeah, I was a really big fan of The Others too. When I didn't know, when I heard the story and what it related to, it connected right back to it. I can't wait to see what he does. I want to see how he puts it on the screen. I want to see if it has the same sort of feel as the original series. Do I think it's going to be fantastic? Yeah, likely. I love the first season, and like I said before, I don't know if we really need a second season, but it makes me happier to know that they're going to do a completely new cast, completely different story, and I'm good.
I'll stop you. We don't know it's a different cast. This could very well be an anthology in the spirit of like American Horror Story, because Mike Flanagan works a lot with the same people, because one of them's his wife, so I mean, she requires it, but no, I'm just kidding. She's a very talented actress, but he does work a lot with the same actors, Carla Gugino and several others, so there's a chance they could bring. I would actually kind of like to see that.
There's also a chance that they could be some of the ghosts that the governess sees in Turn of the Screw, because she does like see cameos. A lot of them. And there's one in particular that is like on the roof of the mansion, and that scene would be really cool if it actually was like a throwback to one of the characters from the first.
That's a really cool idea. That's something that I'm on board with. I would love to see those characters come back as ghost cameos. I like that idea.
I like that idea as ghost cameos myself. I would be concerned if they brought them back as different characters and just reused the same actors, only because tying that back to being American Horror Story would be a way to cheapen it. And I don't want to cheapen this property.
I agree, Johnny.
Why is it going to be cheapen it?
It's like the internet. The internet's going to be like, oh, you guys can't come up with your own idea. You have to use American Horror Story's idea of like, doing this stuff.
Spot on impression of the internet.
Reach into your inner puppet to represent the internet. I think trolls?
That was Barney from The Simpsons. That was awesome.
There's also that.
Oh, Johnny, you're adorbs. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. And on Patreon, we're going to have some cool South by Southwest stuff, hopefully, that you can only find there.
Hopefully.
And we'll just make some stuff up. I'll just run around. I'll be like man on the street. I'll just be running around on the microphone saying, what'd you think of this movie, Bob?
Ooh, that'd be kind of fun. I'll be the recorder.
What's that?
You did that sort of thing last year when you're interviewing certain people.
Did I do that last year?
Like you're there at the Batmobiles and you're
well. That's like I was interviewing actual people that wanted to be interviewed. I'm talking like just run up to strangers in lines and be like, "What did you see?" and kind of get what their reaction.
That'd actually be kind of cool.
Yeah, that sounds like something Fun Man would love to do.
That does sound like something fun. What a volunteer. Like you know what? Let's like that and yeah, that'd be perfect. Amanda, do that and heavy lifting. You need to carry all the bags.
Whoa, I'm not carrying all the bags. This is not that equal of a role. This is
coming back to what we talked about earlier. You buy your own Blu-rays, you carry my bags.
No, why do I have to carry your bags?
Because I would probably carry your bags otherwise.
Can you
chivalry.
How about I carry yours and you carry mine because mine is going to be at least quadruple the weight.
You know
of
what?
Yours.
Let's carry our own bags. Let's do that. That does feel like I'm going to lose on that one. All right, now we move on to our Oscar 2019 discussion. The ceremony is over. Before we get into the actual ceremony itself, I do want to recap quickly the winner. So if there's anything you guys want to throw in as I mention these, go ahead and shout it out.
Pineapple.
I hate you sometimes. If there's anything relevant you would like to reference or shout out in regards to the category of which this thing hath won, please feel free to do it. Okay. Foreign language film. The winner was the incredibly beautiful visual nap of Roma, which was just a great movie to sleep to.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely would recommend everybody just find it. It's better than a lullaby.
Except for the super weird scene where the dude is like naked and doing a lot of weird stuff and his wife's just like hanging out there. And
Yeah. That is a weird
scene. I don't want to say too much, but like...
Can you spoil naked gymnastics? I don't know if you can.
I don't know, but I feel like people should really give that particular scene an opportunity to really shine.
I don't.
And frighten you.
No. I think you're good, but the cinematography is gorgeous.
I've never had my interest in seeing a movie disappear more quickly than Amanda's description of that movie.
Than the phrase naked gymnastics?
Yeah.
That also might be my new favorite phrase. Congratulations, Aaron.
You're welcome. Hashtag naked gymnastics. Animated feature. This was a pleasant surprise because it's based on the greatest character in the comic book universe. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse took home the best animated. Screw you, Disney.
Woo woo, raise a roof.
That's actually very cool stuff. When was the last time Disney didn't win that?
I don't think they ever not. I'm sure there is, but I sure can't think of it.
You know, it did make me think, though, it is probably time to start adding voice actors to the Academy Awards.
Can we get stunts first, though?
Yeah, yes. Stunts first, man. Stunts first.
Although Aaron and I were having this conversation about voice actors, Johnny, the other day about how I think it probably...
Oh, nobody invited me to have this conversation. I see how it is.
You're states away.
You're too busy gathering your evidence for how you present the internet.
Dude, I'm in the same city and I wasn't invited, so mm-hmm.
That's
feel
true.
Bad.
But really about how difficult it must be to be a voice actor, because we were talking about Beyonce being in Lion King. And
she's not a good actor. She's the queen. I get it. She's a great entertainer. I don't know why it makes me an asshole, because I don't think she can act.
I didn't say you were an asshole.
No, but the internet does. She's the queen. Yeah, I get it. She's great, man. I think she's very talented. She can sing. She can do everything except act. She can't act.
But she can use her vocal cords, so maybe she'll be able to...
The gold paint in Goldmember was a better presence than Beyonce.
Oh my god,
Beyonce.
I forgot
That's what
about
I'm
that movie. I forgot she was in that.
I'm just not a fan.
It was so not great.
Of her acting. Of right. her. Anyway, what were you saying, voice acting?
Oh, just how it would be really difficult to be a voice actor and to do that really great. Like, what's his name? Oh god, I feel so bad that I'm doing this right now. He always plays...
Me too, because we could already be on sound editing.
I know, but the guy who always plays those characters...
Nolan North?
No, he's the one you really like. Who does, he did the Ape movie.
Andy Serkis.
Yeah, Andy Serkis.
Wow. You came across
it. I just couldn't forget that name.
Total dweeb right there. Good job.
I couldn't remember his name, okay?
Well, anyway, good that they recognized a really, really innovative movie. So I really, as much as I dreaded that animation, it really does work. And I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait to watch it.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe you haven't seen it yet, artist.
You know, life gets away from me sometimes.
Yeah.
And yes, okay. Artist. That means I spend a lot of time in a closet drawing and painting stuff. So yes, it happens.
Oh, ask your wife if you can have your own room. Sound editing, Bohemian Rhapsody, visual effects, First Man. Shut up.
Wrong.
Robbed. Should have been Ready Player One by a long shot.
I agree with you 100%.
That one made me unhappy.
Well, some of us might say Christopher Robin, but...
You know what? I would have been fine with Christopher Robin, too. I thought the characters were stunning in that. They really came to life, so I would have been fine with that one.
Ready Player One was great, though.
First Man is nothing I have not seen in every other space movie, and Star Wars, honestly, does it better.
Exactly.
So, sorry. All right. Film editing, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Wrong. Wrong.
have you seen the clip for film editing?
Yes. So bad. It's like, and then I saw somebody who's a screenwriter and he posted on Twitter and he was like, I can't even imagine what that script would have looked like. It was like chair cut, looks cut, like waist cut, and everything was just like one word and cut, because that's pretty much, they counted 72 cuts in that one scene.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what you're talking about. There's a scene in Bohemian Rhapsody where it's just nonstop cutting, and it looks like Taken 3, if you saw that, where he jumps over the fence. It looks worse than that. It's just bad.
And they're at a brunch table. There's no action. If they were at, like, doing something where they were moving around, it would be fine. But, like, you should have just done some, like, reverse shots there and not done, like, chop, 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 chop.
At first, I thought it was, like, it was a choice. I'm like, whoa, they got, like, Easter eggs in here? Am I supposed to look really close? Nope, just bad.
So 92 cuts of brunch?
72, I think. Oh. And yeah, they're literally sitting at a table talking.
It's like the Psycho scene, but without the talent.
That too.
Yeah, ouch. I said it. Sorry, buddy. I mean, I'm glad you won, but you got to own it. You got to own it. Sorry. My bad. All right, now we move on to animated short. Bow, sure. Live action short. Skin, sure. Documentary short, which is following us on Instagram because of Amanda, I think. Period. End of sentence. A short about a period.
About menstruation. Let's say menstruation.
And does it have a voice? Is it like sing and dance? Is it maybe. Like, hello, baby. Hello, my darling. Hello, my ragtime doll.
I don't know. Sometimes it does sound like, I have no crabs.
That is accurate. That's how I'm it feels, done. Too. But also, can we back up to bow? Because Aaron.
No, let's skip it.
Aaron was talking about this movie and he's like, I didn't see this, blah, blah, blah. And his wife was like, yes,
yeah,
we did.
We watched it together, yeah.
You watched it with me.
But I didn't.
It was just a funny conversation.
It was, because she was arguing with me and I'm like, I have never seen this before. It was when I watched The Incredibles 2. I wasn't with you when you saw The Incredibles 2. I literally was not in the same state. So I don't even... Okay. The original score was Black Panther, which kind of surprised me. It's a good score, but I was kind of surprised that one won. Original song, no surprise at all, was Shallow from A Star Is Born, yes. Performed on stage by the people that were eye-humping each other.
Oh, man. The way I swear sure they were going to kiss. I was waiting for it.
Can I? Okay, I got to ask a question about this. There are people that were shipping the hell out of these two.
Me.
I hope they get together. Okay, I just want to point out. So you're advocating he has an affair in front of a billion people. His baby's mama and his own mama who were in the audience.
I'm not advocating for them to cheat. I'm just saying her engagement is ended. His marriage might end.
They're not married.
Oh, or their relationship might end.
That's his baby's mother.
State your evidence.
State what evidence?
The relationship might end.
No. I was saying, like, I would. I think she's
willing Bradley Cooper to get dumped or to do the dumping.
Right. I'm saying I don't want them to cheat to be together, but her engagement has ended. If his relationship were to end and then the two were to get together, then it's.
This seems horrible to even think. So many people were talking about it. I'm like, you're advocating this guy leaves his baby's mama for Lady Gaga.
Why should he stay with her just because of his baby? Because she had children. Did you know?
Maybe he loves her and she's hot.
Did you know? First of all, I have 2 points now. Did you know that parents who stay together just for their children, instead of getting divorced... Who's
saying that that's why they're together? Only you're saying that.
God, he sure does not eye-hump his...
How did we get here?
He doesn't eye-hump his wife like it is Lady Gaga. My second point is...
Yes, he does. I'm sure he does.
He does. Have you seen his wife eye-hump, or girlfriend eye-hump her like that?
Second point, you're saying that he should stay with her because of how hot she is.
No, that's a factor. I think she's probably a lovely person. I'm saying he's already with her.
But you're saying it doesn't matter.
Look, Lady Gaga's got a bad track record. Bradley got a better shot last in this thing with who you're with now, supermodel lady. Oh, boy. And plus, your mom was watching.
Look, you know what? Why can't they just have an amazing amount of affection for each other as friends? That's completely possible.
Absolutely.
That's actually more beautiful than two people getting together and having a relationship where they're bumping uglies and stuff. They don't need to be in a relationship. It's much more beautiful to see two friends interacting in a way that is beautiful and fun and happy, and it brings so much joy. Just think of it that way. It's cleaner, it's better, and more family friendly.
Okay, real quick though. So you want your wife?
No, not real quick.
Your wife to sit on a stage with another man's arm around her and like
he's not insecure.
Yeah, you know what? I know where the boundaries are. I know where she's going at night. I know what's going on. I'm not worried about what my
wife
does.
If she
has chemistry with another guy, then that's fine. It's just chemistry. Chemistry is a thing. I have chemistry with other women. It happens.
I have a third possibility I'd like to interject into this conversation, just for the sake of argument before we move on.
Is it that Bradley Cooper's gay? Because I don't believe that.
They're actors.
What?
They were selling. Holy
they
shit, were selling what? The fantasy to the fans who were watching the
100%.
Show.
Like
me, I'm okay if that's acting. I live it.
He looked genuinely because honestly, he's a better actor. I'm not knocking her. I just think he's a better actor. She looked like she was putting on a performance the whole time. It looked like a performance. It never looked like I want to be inside your soul. It just looked like,
why would you want to be with the demon?
Evil Dead 3.
All right, let's move on.
Starring Lady
Production
Gaga.
Design, Black Panther, which I totally agree with. That's beautiful work.
Yeah.
Beautiful work. And great speech, too. It was a beautiful speech when she thanked Ryan Coogler. And
oh, my gosh.
Wasn't that her? That was her, right?
I
think so. Poor other guy didn't get to talk, but that's cool. You know, I get it.
There's a worse speech in here, though.
Yeah, we'll get there. Cinematography, Roma, I'll agree with that. I mean, it's a movie I could fall asleep to, but it looks beautiful while you're napping. It's stunningly beautiful. Like, it's beautifully shot. Maybe it was costume design. I can't remember which one was her speech. And I apologize. I just don't have it for me. Black Panther for costume design as well. Makeup and hairstyling, Vice. Any other movie would have shocked me because the makeup for Christian Bale is phenomenal. Documentary feature, Free Solo. Minding the Gap did not win. The Rockford Native, Bing Lu, did not win. Sorry, buddy.
Try again next time.
That was kind of a disappointment. Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. It was cool to see how much support his hometown had for him, though, because the school where he started his first film education.
Yes, Amanda and Scott are all from Rockford, and that's where Bing Lu is from. And yeah, we were all pretty go, dude. Go,
they had
go.
A whole watch party for him in celebration
at
his old college, which was super cool.
The whole town was really, really not just rooting for him to win, but just thrilled that he was up there to begin with.
Yeah. Too bad he didn't get on stage. That's all right. Sound mixing, Bohemian Rhapsody. That's no surprise. Original screenplay, Green Book. Green Book.
Good for them.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about Green Book in a little bit because.
I'm sure we will.
Man. Adapted screenplay, Black Klansman. That's when Spike Lee got up there. We'll come back to Spike. Oh, you're adorable. Supporting actor, Mahershala Ali for Green Book. What a class act that dude is. So speaking of class acts, supporting actress, Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk. Ugh. And I'm talking about Chris Evans. What a class act. He was such a gentleman.
He was so sweet.
He escorted her up to the Oscar stage. And I know she won, and it was her moment. Her speech was great. But I rewatched him walking her up there probably like 50 times.
It's
no
so
exaggeration,
sweet.
50 times.
Did you see the picture of him taking Betty White up?
He's done that many times. Yeah, that's his thing, being a gentleman.
The caption says, America's greatest superhero escorting Captain America on stage.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah, that's adorable. But that's old. This is new. Regina King and him, I'm shipping them. There you go. I want those two to get
together.
Well,
and also she was
and his mom. If you see there's a picture of her mom, looking at him like Bradley Cooper looked at Lady Gaga. I mean, her mom is pregnant right now. And just by looking. That's how intense it was. Good for mom. I don't blame her. He's a handsome fella. All right. Director Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, which is kind of a surprise because the best picture director wasn't even nominated.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So the actor, Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Totally deserved it.
Totally deserved it. No big surprise. But why are you have your mom in the auditorium and she's in the back of the room, but your new girlfriend's sitting with you? I've got a problem with that, Rami. We'll talk later. Maybe that's why karma took you for a tumble.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I saw that.
Actress. I'm just kidding. He did a wonderful job. Seems like a genuinely nice guy.
Just not to his mom.
Well, you know what? Maybe he had family. Maybe they had a lot of family there and she wanted to sit with her family.
Maybe.
I would make sure my mom was sitting right next to me. I'm telling you that right now.
You would kick Chris Evans out of his chair so your mom could have a spot.
You're damn right I would. And Captain America would do it because he's a damn gentleman. Olivia Colman for The Favorite. Probably the best speech of the night, I would argue.
For sure. There's no argument.
That's yeah, great. It was really good.
Whoa. John said something super positive. Please feed into that. Say something more. We're not used to it, and I think we should stop the show and just pay.
Yes, I agree.
Homage.
Well, we can get back to it later, but I really adored her speech.
So okay. He just repeated the same thing.
Yeah, I think he just said what he already said. All right.
Yeah, do you want me to go any further? It was cute. It was heartwarming. It was sweet. It was like the whole thing where she shushed them for trying to speed her up. I was laughing for that. I almost was brought to tears about how much she was just so appreciative of everything. It was just so much emotion, so much. It was a beautiful speech. I really loved every minute of her being on stage.
All right. And Best Picture, probably the biggest surprise of the night, but it shouldn't have been because they've won many awards prior to this, but Green Book. Green Book won Best Picture.
Surprise the hell out of me.
And that's where we have lots of issues with that one. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Green Book. There's this issue. What's the best way to say that? This is more in regards to everything that happened after Green Book won, I guess. The onslaught of articles and posts, mainstream media, entertainment sites saying Green Book didn't, quote unquote, deserve to win. And I'm trying to understand why. I mean, why do you guys think that is? Just because they say so? I mean, thousands of people voted on this. It's not like this was the Golden Globes where it's just 90 people. This thousands of people voted on this picture. I said picture like my grandfather.
None of the articles that I've seen have really griped about the quality of the movie so much as the way it told the story from a racial standpoint. And I think that's for this movie. And now I'll full transparency. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Amanda and I both have, so if you got to ask, want to ask something, you can.
I listened to all the tapes of Tony in the interview that was posted, and I don't think that argument has merit. It wasn't, you know, the white guy holding the hand of the black guy through, you know, all these trials and tribulations. If you listen to the tapes of the actual guy who Viggo Mortensen plays, he was being taught by this guy who was being chauffeured. And I'm hoping that that's the way the story came across. Like, that guy was teaching him how to be a better person.
It actually worked both ways.
I would agree.
Really did. Yeah, I mean, I really feel like you got something from Doc Shirley's side of it, and you got something from Tony Lip's side of it. And if you don't know what the movie is, it's basically Doc Shirley was a renowned classical pianist who was traveling the Deep South, and he had never done so. So he had a chauffeur who was Tony Lip, who's this kind of Jersey wise guy.
Very Italian.
Yeah, and he's a racist, and he starts very much a racist. Now, some people said that the racism is washed over. There's a whole lot of talk about the notion of a white savior, and also that it's not historically accurate because Don Shirley's family weren't consulted. But according to the writer, the writer is Tony's son, by the way. So he knows his end of it. We've heard the tapes from Tony, so we know that's Tony's account. And he said that he spoke to Doc Shirley himself. Doc Shirley blessed the film and the story he's telling and didn't want the family involved. He asked him not to do that. Who are we to say that's not true?
And also the director of the film after, because people were asking him what his remarks were in response to these articles. Mm-hmm. And he responded with saying, you know, we had reached out to the family and we had talked to them, and we had also gotten a lot of information that for Dr. Shirley, his family were his friends, not his blood relatives for a lot of the people. So that's why they went.
Yeah, they were able to get a lot of cooperation.
Right. And so it sounds to me like they did the best they could. And if his son was the writer, he got a blessing for the movie. I think Aaron is completely correct in that it doesn't wash away the racism. It's very obvious in the beginning of the film how racist he is, because that's what helps build up the tension that he's going to take this guy on a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, oh, God, man. Like, he even gives him the book of where you can actually stay as a black man. And that's what the Green Book is. It's like where you have to be segregated. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the film, you're understanding that Tony, who is Viggo Mortensen's character, is accepting of Shirley and of blacks. And his wife is what kind of helps get him to that point, too. But the two of them help each other in their own lives. You know, Shirley is helping Viggo not only understand that there's no purpose to racism and that it's just so deeply embedded into his area that there was no point to it. And he didn't even understand why he was racist anyway, and helped him write love letters and things like that. So there was a really good dynamic, and it showed friendship between two people.
Yeah, it was more about friendships. I think it's an entertaining film, more about overcoming your preconceived notions about people than it was about and friendship than it was about anything else. And some people are saying it's a soft take on racism. It wasn't trying to be Roots or 12 Years a Slave. I don't know why is this a problem to make a film that is looking at racism and trying to advocate understanding people so that you can maybe get over it. So if you want to combat racism, the answer is not always to just say, shut up, you can't be racist. It's letting people get to know people of different colors and knowing we're no different. We're really not that different. I don't know why you think that. So you get to know someone and then you realize, you know what? They're not so different. That's how you combat racism, by
killing them with kindness.
Not necessarily killing them with kindness, but just understanding. And people don't understand if you just shut them up. They're not going to listen. It's a good story for that. I really believe that. It's a really good film. I would dare say a great film. I don't have any problem with it winning whatsoever.
That's a lesson that should be taken away from this movie, because the best way to get two people over their differences is to lock them in a room and make them work it out. These guys were locked in a car driving cross country for how long?
Weeks. Weeks.
You're going to know somebody really well at the end of those weeks. And I think that would be a great lesson to take away from this movie. I can't wait to see it. I really, really want to see this one now.
I just don't know what, like, Sam Rockwell was a bigger racist last year, and when we were over him, and he was over, you know, he was likable by the end of the movie in like the span of 8 days, and we're fine with that, and he can take the Oscar. Well, I don't know. I just don't understand people sometimes, some of the outrage.
I do want to just say that if there's somebody who is of color and has seen the movie, who is a listener of the podcast and would like to add in their thoughts of the film, I think that it's appropriate for them to still have their voice as well on their perspective of it.
Let's go into our overall grade of this year's event, A through F. What do you grade in this year's Oscars, Scott?
I'm going to give this one an A. It's been a while since I've watched the Oscars. I stopped watching it because I didn't like kind of the theatrics that it was getting into. The host had almost more time on stage than any of the actors or actresses who were receiving or presenting. I think moving forward, they need to just get rid of the host. This show clicked. It moves.
You really
smoothly.
Think 1 year decides that?
I think that this year showed what the Oscars should be. It was quick. It was smooth. It wasn't wasting a lot of time and keeping people up for 3+ hours. It was presenting the awards, telling everybody they did a good job, letting them do their speeches, and then we're done. I loved it. I thought that I give it an A. I thought it was really good.
I will give it a B+. And I actually had it as an A- at first, and I changed my mind because the way they handled things leading up to the event, I think really dampened my perspective going into the Oscars.
Definitely lowered expectations.
Yeah, that's for sure. But it just made me not as excited for it as I am. And I think that they should have done a better job with making the decisions that are appropriate for what the show is supposed to be about before only making the correct decision because they had a huge backlash. But the way they did make the show flow and how fluid it was excellent. And I really did enjoy it. And I think it was one of the better ones we've had in a long time.
I'm going to give it a C+, maybe a B-, but probably an A, because I can't just stick to one thing. And
there's your John answer, Amanda.
I was going to try not to laugh, but then Aaron like snorted and I started laughing. Anyhow. No, I'm going to give it an A. The reason why I really enjoyed this is because it was much more streamlined. There wasn't a lot of derailing of the show. Wasn't like the momentum that was built up wasn't knocked off by any sort of like silly skits or anything else like that. The acts that we got were a part of what we were getting and from the actual movies. And I felt like it was much more streamlined and I enjoyed it a lot more for that reason. And I got to see more of the people I was interested in seeing, which were the people who were presenting and then and why they were presenting and the people who were accepting and why they're accepting. I wanted to see more of that versus a lot of the being a clown aspects.
I give it an A minus. Yep, that's where I gave it. The build up to it was a real problem, but all in all, it's about the execution. And I think they did a great job. 3 hours, 15 minutes, exactly where it should be. That sounds fine to me. All right, so what went right this year? Like, well, what stood out to you? We talked about Olivia Colman. Anything else stand out to you?
Olivia Colman's speech was the biggest thing that stood out to me. What I did like that this year, with the exception of maybe one or two incidents, they were able to keep the political stuff to a minimum this year versus like everybody having a political statement. Mm-hmm. It was so much nicer to just have a real speech where people were thanking people instead of using that moment as like, here's a soapbox. Oh, by the way, here's your award. Here's a soapbox. None of that was actually happening. And it was just a much more enjoyable experience.
I'm going to have to agree. And to go back to Olivia Colman, I don't think that I have ever been moved by someone that I've never watched in a movie before, but seeing her speech literally brought me to tears. I was wiping my sob away from my face. Me too.
I don't even cry. I was like, what is that? Oh, it's liquid.
Why is it coming out of my eyeball? And she was so precious, and it was a humbling moment to see somebody who was just like what all of us imagine we would be if we were to ever pursue our dream in filmmaking and finally get to that stage and accept an award for something that you could tell she was not like anticipating to get that win. You know, I loved that she was so sweet and humbled about it, and she just did not seem like she was egotistical. Sometimes when they're accepting an award, they're like, oh, you know, they're so ready. They're like, I knew I was going to get this.
And can we add, I'm glad that Glenn Close didn't win just because she's been nominated so many times. I really hate when people say, well, this is her year because, you know, it's accumulation of work. I hate that. I just hate that. Like, mm-hmm. It should be you were the best for the year. And apparently this year it was Olivia's year. So I'm glad that happened.
Right. Well, and I have to make my mention, I loved the Cooper Gaga performance. I love that movie, love that song, so I was really excited about that. But I think the one thing that stood out to me the most that made me really excited for the show was how they opened it. The opening of having Queen play with Adam Lambert, which I was not certain about Adam Lambert.
That was way better than I thought it would be.
It was such a great idea to get that going and get the music involved. And you saw everybody who was there really excited and ready for the Oscars to start. And I hadn't seen that expression on people's faces at the beginning in a long time.
I had two that kind of jumped out at me. She just mentioned one, which was the Cooper Gaga performance, which was just mind-blowing. And it wasn't just mind-blowing because it's a great song and they have great chemistry together. I love the way that they just got up from their chairs and walked up on stage and just assumed these two characters. You almost never get to see that in the Oscars, where people just get up out of their chairs and then become those people that you saw on screen. Mm. Mm-hmm. I thought that was amazing. The other thing that I liked was the fact that maybe it was because of the lack of a host or some of the other little mini shows that they do during the Oscars. Almost nobody got cut off during their speeches.
Yeah. Music, there was a couple of cutting off that was hysterical.
There were one or two, but if you think back to previous years, they're playing, you know, half the people giving their speeches are getting played off stage. I can only think of maybe two or three during the entire show where that happened. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, one poor guy, they turned the lights off on him.
The only one that I had a problem with was, and I will be the first to admit, like, I'm fine with Green Book winning. I think their speech sucked because I didn't thank Tony Lip or Doc Shirley, and they should have.
Yeah, that sucked. Horrible.
But they cut them off before they had a chance to. And I'm like, this is the best, this is your biggest award. Don't cut them off. There's literally like 50 people on the stage. There's going to be chaos. Don't cut them off.
Literally, Julia Roberts even responded and was like, well, I guess that's the end of the show.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I'm fine with being succinct and keeping it close and tight and everything else, but that was a big no-go. But the three Musketeers that were trying to fiddle around with their damn speech at the time they won, nobody has this conversation before. And that's what I kept yelling to myself. But then I remember when Troy and I won for the Podcaster Awards, we didn't think we were going to win. So we had no speech prepared. So it's possible. But just wing it a little better.
You know, one of the things that I really enjoyed was my reaction when I realized that Peter Farrelly was the one who directed Green Book. Because that was news to me. Because I didn't pay much attention to the movie. But that's Peter Farrelly. Like, where's the joke with somebody having bodily fluids hanging from their ear?
Yeah.
Have you seen my baseball? Where's that joke?
I think he's trying to be a more mature filmmaker. He got a lot of flack because apparently in the old days, he used to just whip out his penis on set.
That's awkward.
That was the old days. You know,
There are no old days anymore.
That was the 90s. It was a thing.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm sorry. I would never do it now. Why would you do it then? I work with people. I don't remember ever whipping it out. Like, hey, how's it going? Huh? Is this funny? I don't think it's very funny. It's just weird. So my favorite things. Okay, first, opening the show with Queen was great. Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph were hysterical.
They were really good.
They can come back and open every show. And then Melissa McCarthy, for me, stole the show because that woman can deadpan better than, you know, she never gets enough credit, I don't think. You know, a lot of people like downplay her. I love Melissa McCarthy. And to come out with that ridiculous bunny outfit, and then she's still playing it straight as she's like using it for a puppet as she's talking. Mm-hmm. And it's like the puppet is talking at the same time she's talking. And she's just brilliant. Like, as a comedian, she is brilliant.
And that ridiculous wig they had her in, that crazy short hair, red hair wig they had her
so
in.
So funny.
I think that was my favorite presenter. She was just, by far, awesome. She was hysterical.
I loved it. And I did like that the presenters were doing like two wars at a time. It was a nice way to get this thing going. Let's go. Let's roll. Yeah. I like that.
Two things I think we should make note of, too. We kind of talked about it with the production designer who won an Oscar, Hannah mm-hmm. Beachler. Mm-hmm. She was the first Black production designer to win an Oscar. And then
awesome.
Yeah, for this another one for Black Panther, Ruth E. Carter made Oscar history as the first African-American woman to win Best Costume Design.
And Mexico, Roma's the first Mexican movie to win Best Foreign Language Film.
Yep.
Which is cool.
A lot of history being made this year.
Yeah, a lot of history.
Oh, so here's something I have a question for you guys. Boy. So there was an awful lot of Spanish speaking going on in these... Huh? So there's an awful lot of Spanish speaking going on stage. When I was watching it, because I watch it the day later on Hulu, I didn't see any subtitles. Did you guys get subtitles?
Yes.
I have a wife.
All right.
Well, I've got that too.
She speaks Spanish. Yeah, your wife is Hispanic too, right?
So. Yeah, but there were subtitles on the screen.
By the way, I did clarify for anybody saying it's not fair that I don't like Roma. My wife is a Hispanic daughter of immigrants, and she said it's okay for me to hate that movie. So, bam. I cleared it.
Well, that's fine. My wife has a husband, so she was able to figure out what was being said too. Everybody else, I just want to make sure that
this is what they're saying, honey. Here you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, what went wrong? What didn't you like, other than Rami Malek not sitting with his mom?
The thing that bothered me the most, we kind of already touched on, is just that for the Best Picture winners, they got cut off. That really bothered me. It rubbed me the wrong way because I'm like, this whole time, they've done a really good job of being very reasonable with times for speeches. Mm-hmm. And when they notice that somebody has a really good message they're getting across or something that they want to talk about, they're giving them a little bit of extra time.
Oh, and they start cranking up the music, which is what we're going to start doing to Amanda on a weekly basis, John. We just like start playing it louder and louder and louder until they just stop talking and got off the stage. It was great.
Yeah. And the way they did that to the Best Picture winner really kind of bothered me. But I think they used it effectively with the trio who just could not get their life together to the point that that's the one I think they turned the lights out on. I can't remember, but God.
What about you, John? Scott, what about you? Anything that went wrong for you?
I wasn't a big fan of the way they did that to Best Picture either. In years past, even when Oscars have gone like way over time, Best Picture is the one where they don't start the music. They let those people get up there and talk. Because like you said, there's a thousand people on stage. There's chaos. Everybody wants to say something. This year, it annoyed me that they cut off the Best Picture speech. I was not happy with that. The other one, and maybe it was just me, but when Kanye went up there, not Kanye. Jesus, I knew I was going to do that.
Spike Lee.
When Spike Lee That's in my head, because when he got up, when he lost Best Picture, I'm like, oh man, we're going to see another Kanye. He's going to go up on stage and say he should have won it. But when he was up at receiving his award, the two guys that are up there with him really looked like they had something to say.
Yeah.
And they never got a chance to say anything. And I thought
there were three guys.
I thought there were only two.
Oh, there's four total.
That was uncool. You know, you're not the only person involved with this movie. Give everybody who went up there with you, you know, give them 5 seconds to say something.
And his speech was actually decent if you read it. But if you watch it, it was just like, what? I couldn't make out half of it. I'm not trying to be rude. I legitimately couldn't make most of it out. I mean, and then you read it after.
Like when Aaron edits me.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
Are any of you going to, while we're on the topic of Spike Lee, talk about what he did?
Yeah, as part of mine, because I can't, I'm absolutely furious with Spike Lee. I'll be honest, I haven't been a fan of his as a person for a long time. I don't like how Spike Lee handles certain things. I really don't believe in, I deserve, and he's a big, I deserve. I should have gotten an Oscar for Do the Right Thing. I should have gotten this. I should have gotten that. Why? Just because you say so? I mean, yeah, it was a great film. Does that mean you deserve the Oscar? Go look at the finalists for Best Picture in that year. There were a lot of great films that year. I mean, it's just a fact. And I wouldn't take away from any of them. Yes, even Driving Miss Daisy has its place in history. Go look into it.
It does, yeah. Screenwriting, for sure.
So I can respect the man's body of work and still not respect the man. And that's where I am with Spike Lee. I think he has several great films, a lot of mediocre films. And Black Klansman wasn't his best. It was good. It was really good. But the most powerful moment of the film isn't even from the film. It's the last 2 minutes of the movie where he replays Charlottesville footage. And it's a great ad, and it does like drive home a point, and it's very emotional. It's hard to watch, but the most powerful moment of the film isn't his. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to me, that detracts from the movie. You don't deserve the Oscar, to me. I didn't think for Best Picture. But what happened is, this is what we were talking about, and what proves kind of what a sore loser he is. And he was being a petulant child, I think. My opinion. That's just my opinion.
I agree.
Totally agree.
They announced Scream Book 1. This is confirmed by several sources. It isn't just like one person. They didn't show it on the camera because it would look bad. But Green Book 1, and he got up in a huff and tried to leave. And he had some conversation with Jordan Peele, which isn't 100% confirmed, so I'm not going to speculate. And he went and sat back down. And then he refused to look at the stage. He turned his back to them the entire time they were on the stage. And then he did a presser, and he said that the ref made a bad call. It's just like sore loser stuff, and I just have no respect for that.
It was even worse in his press after, too, because he was drinking or whatever, and somebody, one of the press reporters or whatever, had asked him and specifically brought up his lack of concern for these winners and how he literally got up and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And addressed it to him and how he felt about, you know, not winning, basically, Green Book winning. And his response was, he just laughed about it. And then he took another sip of his champagne. He's like, well, I'm on my sixth champagne, so that tells you how I feel, or something like that. And then went on to say that every time he loses to a movie, it's when there's somebody else who's driving somebody else around, and they just switched up the seating arrangement.
Okay, that part was funny.
It's still funny, but yeah. Like, he's so pretentious. Like, I didn't have the problem that Aaron did. I thought Aaron was always being very dramatic, because I've never looked into Spike Lee's character as a person.
She thought why do you hate Spike Lee? He's fine. He seems like a good guy, and everybody seems to like him. Da-da-da-da.
Right. It was just like, well, I don't understand the hatred for this dude. I've never seen him, like, do anything really wrong.
I don't hate him. Disrespect,
but there are a lot of people
who do hate him.
And I never understood it. And then after I didn't even know he got up and walked away. I was watching the press videos in the morning after the Oscars, and I watched the response that he had about it and how he laughed about it. He was proud of the fact that he was that disrespectful to other filmmakers. And to me, if you can't respect the craft in other people's work and you think that yours is ultimately always better than another person's, I lose all of the respect that I had for you, because this entire event is not about you. It's about respecting every single person who has spent hours and hours and hours of their lives getting to this point and perfecting their craft, whether you agree with it or not.
And I would like to point out, just imagine, just take yourselves a second, and just imagine what Spike Lee would say if someone said that about his award.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Exactly. if you look at the body of work that was nominated this year for Best Picture, you know, A Star is Born, Black Klansman, The Green Book, Roma, Black Panther, any one of those could have won.
Rightfully so.
To say that, oh, I'm entitled to win over that kind of talent, to me, that's the heights of entitlement.
And I'll be honest, even though I didn't like Roma, and I don't like Roma. I just find it to be a very boring, boring movie. It's a great story, way too slowly told. But directing-wise, he deserves the Oscar. He was 100%. It was a beautifully shot movie. It was a stunning movie to look at, just not watch and enjoy.
And the Academy loves black and white.
Yeah. It's well done. John, well, any last thoughts on Spike Lee before we move on?
I like this hat.
All right.
Can I bring up one last thing before we move on?
Sure.
Every year, you know, they nominate, five or six movies for Best Picture, which means one person wins and five people lose.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I can really remember somebody losing badly. You know, everybody sits in those chairs and feels, oh, man, I wish that had been me. I could say I'm an Oscar-winning actor, and I get to go up there and get my speech and get my statue. You can't tell it by looking at them. They smile. They applaud. They give kudos to the person who's on stage. This is the first time where I can really remember somebody going, screw this.
Well, I mean, La La Land was kind of rude because they knew they lost and they still were trying to talk. So there's that. But you're right. No, people, they're generally very respectful about it. Yes. Steven Spielberg had to watch while Shakespeare in Love took home the trophy.
And over that was
Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, that was just flat out robbery. And he still was very gracious about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, that's the mark of somebody who really deserves to be in that room.
It's tough, man. It's tough because I really do love his work. I mean, some of his work. Some of his work has driven a movement to many people. Malcolm X is a fantastic film.
Right.
And Do the Right Thing is a fantastic film. Black Klansman's a very good film. So he's got some classics under his belt. It's the person that drives me crazy.
You know, it's easy to be gracious when you win. It's a lot harder to be gracious when you lose. And some people just don't have that.
Wow. Put that on a t-shirt or something.
Yeah.
All right. So is there anything that could improve next year's ceremony? I've been thinking about this a lot. And I think they kind of nailed it this year. The only thing I could think of is Best Picture. Make sure you handle that a little bit smoother. But outside of that, I don't have a problem with anything they did this year. I really don't. I felt In Memoriam. Okay. In Memoriam, they missed several people that I don't understand how they miss. So, you know, Vern Troyer. And there's several others that they miss. It's just like those kinds of things. Double check. I mean,
just Google the obituaries.
I could find these. Yeah. Google search. Who died?
Who died in 2018?
You know what I had a problem with the In Memoriam segment? They spent way too much time focusing on the orchestra and letting them play while
and
that In Memoriam thing is up on the screen.
We're not here to hear
them play. We're here to see the people who we're remembering. You know, the orchestra is just there as background.
And the conductor took a bow. I'm like, I don't think you should take a bow.
This isn't a bowing moment.
Yeah, no. you should be humble in this moment, I think. But I didn't like the song. I didn't like the music at all. I like it better when they sing over it. They sing like a very, very heartfelt ballad or something. Okay, that's all we got.
Well, no host. I know Scott kind of said that, but if they keep that up and they handle it the way they did this year, I think it makes things run a lot smoother.
100% agree. I like the no host format.
I like the no horse.
No horse?
Horse.
There were no horses.
Oh, boy.
Yay!
Anyhow, I like the no host format, and or if we have to have a host, why not have Tina Fey and the rest of the ladies do the
hosting? Oh, I would watch that.
That was pretty good.
I thought that, too, at the beginning. I'm like, there's your host team right there.
They are so good. Right. They play off each other so
well. Or Sam Jackson. Just give Sam Jackson every award.
They would have to bleep every other word.
No. He wouldn't be able to help himself, man. I'm telling you, that would be
bleeped. At least you'd get the sports score between.
I thought that was great.
Oh, how did I forget about that? That's so funny.
Next one.
Yeah, listen to me. The sports score. Like, I don't know what game's on at the time.
Sports ball, John.
Sports ball.
It was sports ball.
All right. Well, we have the winners of our Ho Oscar contest. You ready? Here they go. From number 3 to number 1. Here you go. I know some people are listening intently. Number 3, and we just have your email addresses. So we're going to go with that. P-Mistric, P-M-I-S-T-R-I-C. You came in number 3rd, sir. Number 2 is actually a tie for 2nd and 3rd. And Rodney Warsham, that's number 2. And the winner is SLC-2466, you have my favorite name. I love that name.
SLC Punk is such a good movie.
Or they probably live in Salt Lake City.
Those are my initials, but that's not my email address.
Oh, you didn't win then, buddy. I don't know what to tell you. But you won SLC-2466, and we're going to give number two and number three the option to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode. So congratulations there. And the winner, you get a t-shirt or a Blu-ray. We'll be in touch with that. All right. Now.
Wait, are we not going to mention that I won for the second year in a row here?
Oh, the host contest?
Yeah.
No, we weren't going to mention that, actually.
Yeah, we are. I beat them.
Well done.
Second year in a row.
I think everybody understood that.
Okay. Well done.
By now.
Hey, look, I don't win much. I need to take my wins when I get them, okay?
Hey, how many did John get right? Like seven?
Eight.
Eight, which includes what is the tagline for Hollywood Outsider.
I sure hope he got that one right.
I thought for sure he was going to like mess with us and pick one of the other ones.
You sure it's messing with us? Or it's just he didn't know. He's like,
I just smashed buttons, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
He designs the t-shirts. I would hope he knows.
Yeah, but he's usually asleep by the end of the show.
So that's true. That's true.
I'm usually asleep by the end of the show.
Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses come from our own pockets, and Patreon fans help support their favorite podcast. Scott here is a supporter for
you
Patreon.
You are welcome.
Yeah, I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Depending on which tier you select, there are $1, $3, $5, $10, even a $20 option. And at $3, we have a monthly bonus podcast called Bad Movie Night, where we discuss a film that critics or others deem a bad movie, but we enjoy. Then at $5, and I think our next one is going to be Cellular, then at $5, you get Bad Movie Night. Plus, there is an exclusive monthly bonus episode where we discuss things we won't discuss on a regular show and often get a lot more personal. So as you go up, there are more perks. You can even pick a topic or possibly guest for an episode. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the bonus content that's in your tier. Now you understand what it is. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider.
Thank you. I don't like you guys enough to give you $20.
Well, maybe somebody else does.
You know, there are, and I won't name them because they don't wish to be named, but there are a couple that pay the $20 that don't want to do, they don't want any of the benefits. They just support the show.
No, that's awesome.
That is fantastic. Like, seriously, and I'm not, you know, normally I'm a snarky, but I'm not being snarky. It's super cool.
It's
very cool. Say, if I had the extra money, I would give you guys $20 a month because your show is that good, but I just don't have the extra money, man.
Is that because you're sitting here literally? I mean, that matters.
No, I said that in emails before you guys ever invited me on the show.
Huh. Yeah, but there are different people on the show then.
Yeah, it's still good. I'm on the fence with John, but, you know, you guys are good.
I'm on the fence with John, too. All right.
Maybe we should do something special.
I'm on the fence with John, too. He sucks.
Let's get into our movie Battle Royale. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take eight films, two favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire whole universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of a genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale. All right, the aughts, the first decade of the 2000s, is on deck for this iteration of our Movie Battle Royale. There are 10 movies total, but only 8 make a run for the winner of the greatest Best Picture winner of that decade. We'll discuss why the two that don't make the cut are absent after our initial run-through, because I want it to be a surprise. Here are the 10 choices. You guys ready? Gladiator, Slumdog, I wasn't really asking, I'm just letting you know. All right, Gladiator.
Didn't say anything.
Slumdog Millionaire, The Hurt Locker, Crash, Chicago, A Beautiful Mind, Million Dollar Baby, No Country for Old Men, Gladiator. I already said that one, so it's there twice. You know, I should have won twice. The Departed and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Okay, just making sure I had 10 since I said Gladiator twice. Okay, what we're each going to do is deliver our two choices, and then the votes take it from there. The first round, we each take the vote. So once you deliver your two movies, make sure you take the vote. You don't get to vote for that round, but any tiebreakers will be decided from our listener poll, which was posted on Facebook, as it is every week for whatever the topic is. Ho North is me and Amanda. Ho South is John and Scott. Amanda, you get to go first.
All right, my first movie is The Departed.
You know, see, Bill, like, you're the new guy. Girlfriend. Why don't you stay in the bar? That night I got your numbers. Social Security numbers.
Yeah.
Everybody. everybody's fucking numbers.
Is this something that you just want to go ahead and ask me? Because I'll give you the fucking answer, all right? Frank, look at me. Look at me. I'm not the fucking rat, okay? I'm not the fucking rat.
Start with you agree there is a rat.
You said there is one, all right? I base most of what I do on the idea that you're pretty fucking good at what you do.
Departed is the 2007 Academy Award winner for Best Picture, but also Best Directing, Best Screenplay, and was nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role from Mark Wahlberg. It was directed by Martin Scorsese, so of course it's a good movie. And it was written by William Monahan. It's about an undercover cop and a mole in the police attempt to identify each other while infiltrating an Irish gang in South Boston. It has... And yes, don't be overwhelmed. Leonardo DiCaprio, Mark Wahlberg, and Jack Nicholson. Now I have some fun facts for you guys.
Mm.
When the film won the Oscar for Best Picture, Martin...
that's my fun voice.
Martin Scorsese said that he was surprised the film had won because the film is such a tough, nasty, and violent film. He never thought the idea of the awards... while he was filming it, which I think is a good point to bring up because a lot of movies like this don't get the recognition that they deserve and win an Oscar. The film was so successful that Massachusetts created a 25% tax credit for filmmaking. Mm. So they generated some more money after they were like, we probably should. A possible reason why Leo did not receive an Oscar nomination for his performance in this movie was because Warner Brothers initially did not want to favor DiCaprio over his co-stars and then place him into the leading actor category. The studio favored DiCaprio's leading performance in Blood Diamond back in 2006, which eventually got him a nomination, but he refused to campaign against his male co-stars in the supporting actor category, so Warner bought a no supporting actor ads for DiCaprio, and he did not receive a nomination.
I didn't know that. That makes him even cooler in my book.
Yeah. And then two other things here, or one other thing, actually. One of the two times...
I'm sure you'll make it seem like two.
One of the two times when Clint Eastwood and Martin Scorsese had to compete for Best Picture and Best Director at the Oscars was this time. And then the other time was for Million Dollar Baby, when they went against each other.
Well, that's ironic.
Yeah. My second one is Million Dollar Baby.
If I take you on, you don't say anything. You don't question me. You don't ask why. You don't say anything except maybe, yes, Frankie. And I'm going to try to forget the fact that you're a girl.
That's all I ask.
And don't come crying to me if you get hurt. All righty.
We got a deal.
No, not quite. I'm going to teach you how to fight. Then we'll get you a manager and I'm off down the road.
Well, I hate to argue with you, but...
Don't argue with me. That's the only way we're doing it. I teach you all you need to know and then you go off and you make $1 million. I don't care. You get your teeth knocked out. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it either way. That's just the way it's going to be. It's the only way I'll do it.
Now, this one was directed by Clint Eastwood, and it stars Hilary Swank, Clint Eastwood, and Morgan Freeman. It's a... Do you want me to say that again? You just...
No, I just kind of like that you said Freeman. But I got Fleetwood.
I heard Freeland.
It's a story about a poor waitress who is determined to become a professional boxer with Eastwood as her trainer. She starts from the very bottom, not even knowing how to correctly throw a punch, to being able to knock out almost every opponent in the first round, which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I actually abstained from watching this movie until this because I don't like boxing and it makes me sad and it makes me cry. But I didn't cry in this one, so that's good.
Even at the end?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about the boxing fights. They didn't make me cry.
Okay. I was going to say.
I cried at the end.
Yeah, everybody did.
This is a story about picking yourself up from your bootstraps and following your dreams with perseverance and hard work. This film won the 2005 Academy Awards for Best Picture, Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role, making Hilary Swank the first actress to win an Oscar for portraying a boxer, Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role, Best in Directing, making Clint Eastwood the oldest Best Director Oscar winner because he was like 74 or 72 when he won.
Yeah, and this is a while ago.
He's still kicking. And it was also nominated for the Oscars for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role, Best Writing for Adapted Screenplay, and Achievement in Film Editing. So nominations and awards everywhere. Now, this one has some really cool stuff that I found out about. It was released in December to qualify for the Academy Awards, but it hadn't even begun shooting until July of that year. So it only had a few months to do that. It was also one of the only two boxing movies to win for Best Picture, the other one being Rocky, of course.
A far superior film.
Yep.
the first Best Picture Oscar winner to be released on both HD, DVD, and Blu-ray. Kind of a good throwback there. Swank also contracted an infection, which almost hospitalized her for 3 weeks, and she also gained nearly 20 pounds of straight muscle from her workouts for the role, which I think you can clearly see by even like the midpoint in the film. It stayed in the top five at the box office every single weekend from the time it was nominated for Best Picture until the Academy Awards, and it also played in the theaters for 6.5 months. And my last piece that I thought was interesting was the writer who also directed Crash, Paul Haggis, mm-hmm. was also scheduled to direct this film when Clint Eastwood was asked to direct it as well. But Haggis agreed to step aside as director, so that way Clint Eastwood could do it.
I mean, Clint Eastwood's a better director, so that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. But it's kind of interesting that one of the other movies that we had on our nominations mm-hmm. is...
Small World.
Yep. So, as our guest, between Million Dollar Baby and The Departed, what's your pick?
You're such a happy person, and neither one of those are happy movies. I mean, those are not feel-good movies. Scoot. Oh, sorry. I'm trying not to breathe
I'll in your mouth. Start
over again. All right. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
You're such a happy person, and neither one of those are happy movies. Like, those are not feel-good films. The first time I watched Million Dollar Baby, I was on a plane, and I remember thinking, man, it's a good thing the doors on this plane don't open, because I'm, like, ready to jump after the end of that movie. The Departed, same thing. The ending is not the Hollywood ending that you're hoping for through that entire movie. The Departed wins this for me. The performances were just so amazing by everybody that was in it that I got to give it to that one.
Okay. Aaron, what about you?
Oh, boo, boo, boo. This is a lot closer than I thought it would be, honestly. Million Dollar Baby, I think, is a great movie that's very underrated and unappreciated by a lot of people. But The Departed has so many great performances, even if it's a little cheesy on a rewatch. Like, it doesn't hold up as well as it used to, I don't think. Because logistically, it doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. but still, the performances are so great. And Leo and Mark Wahlberg and, you know, it's not often I can say Mark Wahlberg is one of the strongest pieces of any puzzle.
Right.
But, you know, who are you? I'm the one who does this job. You must be the other guy. I mean, that's just like one of the best movie moments ever. So I'll go The Departed. Jack Nicholson, too, by the way. That was one of his last big, big roles. And
yeah, he was so good in it, too.
So good. The Rat.
Yes.
Well, Johnny, I still want to know what you think, because you're my favorite here. So what's your choice?
Oof. Wow.
Wow.
That was sweet.
Yep.
I should be mean to you more often.
No.
ultimately, for me, The Departed is actually a much more rewatchable movie. I can sit down and watch that anywhere. I find it to be more of a Poppy Field movie than Million Dollar Baby. So I'm going to have to go to Departed.
Wow. Clean sweep.
All right. Departed moves to the next round. Now it's my turn. My first movie is Gladiator.
Will you remove your helmet and tell me your name?
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
Russell Crowe portrays Roman general Maximus Decimus Meridius. He's the father of a murdered son, the husband of a murdered wife, and he will have his vengeance on Commodus, the ambitious son of Emperor Marcus Aurelius, who betrays Maximus and murders his own father to seize the throne. Then Maximus is reduced to slavery, rises to the ranks of the gladiatorial.
No, you were right the first time.
Gladiatorial?
I think you were right the first time.
I've heard it both ways. Arena to avenge the murders of his family and his emperor. It's inspired by Daniel Mannix's 1958 novel, Those About to Die. Gladiator showcased both the intensity of Russell Crowe as well as the savage, sniveling duplicity of Joaquin Phoenix. The film ignited the career of director, or I guess reignited the career, of director Ridley Scott, ensuring that we would have to endure Alien Covenant many years later. The film's mainstream success was responsible for an increased interest in Roman and classical history in the United States. According to the New York Times, this has been dubbed the Gladiator Effect. The character of Maximus was placed 12th on the total film list of 50 best movie heroes and villains, and 35th in the Empire's 100 greatest movie characters. Maximus is also featured on the Australian Legends postage stamp series. That's pretty cool. Now, earning almost $500 million worldwide, the film won multiple Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Actor for Russell Crowe, Best Costume Design, Best Sound, and Best Visual Effects. Somehow, Ridley Scott lost to Steven Soderbergh for Traffic.
Somehow.
Can you believe that? I mean, Traffic is a good movie, but it's not as well shot as Gladiator.
No, it isn't. It's not even close.
That's nutty.
No, it's crazy. But by November 2018, it was announced that Paramount Pictures is developing a sequel somehow, because Ridley Scott will make a sequel to everything he ever can. And I'm sure it won't have a story that makes sense either. Universal has the option to co-finance, with Scott returning as director and Peter Craig writing the script. Lastly, Gladiator is a stunning achievement of acting, direction, and raw emotion. And by the film's enthralling and heartbreaking conclusion, it has provided its own rousing answer to the question, are we not entertained?
No, we're not. I can't stand that movie.
I was.
You know, we're not taking a vote yet.
Sorry.
Next up is The Hurt Locker. And I'm going to nullify Amanda's vote already.
No.
Next up is The Hurt Locker.
You're the guy in the flaming car, Sergeant James.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, that's just hot shit. You're a wild man, you know that?
Huh? Yes,
sir. He's a wild man. You know that? Why don't you shake your hand?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. How many bombs have you disarmed?
I'm not quite sure, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes.
I asked you a question.
873.
That's just hot shit. 873.
They're counting today, sir, yes.
That's got to be a record. What's the best way to go about disarming one of these things?
The way you don't die, sir.
It stars Jeremy Renner in his breakout role. Anthony Mackie, Ralph Fiennes, David Morse, and Guy Pearce are also in the movie. It follows an Iraq War Explosive Ordnance Disposal team who are targeted by insurgents and show their psychological reactions to the stress of combat, which is intolerable to some and addictive to others, especially Jeremy Renner's Sergeant First Class William James. The Hurt Locker was independently produced and directed by Catherine Bigelow, who won the Oscar for Best Director, which I'll come back to, and written by Mark Boll, a freelance writer who was embedded as a journalist in 2004 with a U.S. Army EOD team in Iraq. Boll said of the film's goal, the idea is that it's the first movie about the Iraq War that purports to show the experience of the soldiers. We wanted to show the kinds of things that soldiers go through that you can't see on CNN. And I don't mean that in a censorship conspiracy way. I just mean the news doesn't actually put photographers in with units that are this elite. The film was shot in Jordan, within miles of the Iraqi border, to achieve Bigelow's goal of authenticity. Iraqi refugees were actually used for extras, and the cast worked in the intense heat of the Middle East, getting to the temperatures of 120 degrees Fahrenheit. It's hot!
I would quit.
Is hot. The film was nominated for 9 Academy Awards and won 6, including Best Picture and Best Original Screenplay, making it the first Best Picture winner by a female director. Catherine Bigelow also became the first and only female director to win Best Director. The film grossed $49.2 million worldwide, making it one of the lowest grossing films to win Best Picture. This is a movie that I will say is a huge surprise to me, because I am not a lover of war films. I'm really not. There's so many of them I'm not that big a fan of. But the humanity bleeds through this film through and through, from beginning to end, frame to frame. By the end of the film, James makes really a terrible choice in many respects, but it's one we now understand. And we are left with nothing but undying sympathy for the hell these brave men and women go through to fight somebody else's war. That's The Hurt Locker. Now I take my vote, and I'm going to go to War Guy, Scott Calgaro, because I'm kind of curious. I know you like both these movies, so which way are you going to go?
This is the hardest choice for me out of all the movies that we've selected tonight, because I love war movies. You know that. You just alluded to that. I've talked about it many times on the show.
I believe I just said it.
And I'm a history nut, back to the Roman Empire, which also I've alluded to many times on the show. It's really difficult for me to say which of these movies is better. And I really wanted to pick The Hurt Locker as one of my choices, and you beat me to it. Oh, I really want to say Gladiator, because it's just such an amazingly, beautifully shot, performed film, but I'm not gonna, because I really think The Hurt Locker has an important story to say. I've worked with EOD guys. Those guys are different. like really different. And that came through in the movie in a really, really authentic way. And that's one of my favorite war movies ever. So that's going to get my vote.
I really want to pick Hurt Locker. I enjoy that movie. It was one of my, it's one of the, my favorite purchases I made in a long time. When I first got my, my not this current TV, but the TV just before it, I was the first DVD or Blu-ray purchase I made, and I was able to see it in all its glorious splendor. And, visually, it's a beautiful movie to watch with one single weird exception, which is the very last scene of that movie. You have Jeremy Renner walking towards the camera in his bomb suit, and in the reflection of the bomb suit's visor, you can see the cameraman holding the camera with his bright red shirt.
That's it? That's your whole complaint?
That's a pretty big complaint. I get that.
I've never noticed that.
Like that right there is such a small, simple thing that should not have been in the movie. I don't know why they left it. If somebody finally tells me that it left it as the way, oh, by the way, this is just a movie, fine, maybe I'll change my mind. That's why I'm going Gladiator. Gladiator is a much better movie. It is shot well. It is. There's a lot of consideration for lighting and all that other stuff. You don't see reflections in the weird places, with the exception of maybe some tanks you might see in some spot. And it, ultimately, it's the more rewatchable movie. It's the movie that I can go back to each time I want to revisit it. I have not gone back to Hurt Locker since my first time watching it.
So you two are locked with Gladiator versus Hurt Locker?
Yeah.
You staying with it? Okay. Amanda, I already know the answer to this one.
Yeah, I already told you. I could not care less about Gladiator at all. I mean, great that it has so much going for it, but the story is just not something that I'll ever be interested in. And it's not something that compelled me as I was watching it either. But Hurt Locker, the timing of its release, I think, had a huge impact, because that was the time when it was really, really heavy for, at least for me. I had my brother who was off at war, and it really touched me in a different way, I think, than I expected. But it was also very raw, and it is, to me, it's my favorite war movie that I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah. And I got to give props to Kathryn Bigelow, because, I mean, she really made a mark in history for female directors for that film. And not only did she make that history, she deserved to make that history with this piece. And I 100% would pick this movie time and time and time again. It is one of my, it's in my top 20 favorite movies.
Wow.
Of all time. Like, I love this movie.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Hurt Locker pulls out the surprise, huh? Moves on to the next round. This is getting interesting. Okay. So now we've got Departed versus Hurt Locker. We'll come back to that in a second. Let's go to Whole South. John, what you got?
All right. So my first movie is Slumdog Millionaire.
It's getting hot in here.
Are you nervous?
What? Am I nervous? It's you who's in the hot seat, my friend.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Bloody hell, he's got prey on the run.
Finally.
A few hours ago, you were giving chai for the Phonewallahs, and now you're richer than they will ever be. What a player. Ladies and gentlemen, what a player!
Directed by the great Danny Boyle, adapted from the novel Q&A by Vikas Swarup, Slumdog tells the stories of a rags-to-raja story of an Indian boy who answers every question on the Indian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire correctly. He's accused of cheating, and he has to explain to security, as he was able to relate the answers to all the questions to his life experiences. And that's what we see during the movie, is his life through that questioning. Slumdog is nominated for 10 Oscars. It won 8 of them, the most of any movie in 2008. It's also won Golden Globes, BAFTAs, but none of that really matters. What does matter is that the movie is a joy to watch. Visually, story-wise, acting, everything about it is an incredible cascade of dancing lights and colors, and the story has so much richness to it. The actors are so wonderfully new to us that it's something just, it's all just brand new. It's heartwarming, tense, exhilarating, and you take this unknown cast plus a venerable director, and it's not hard to see why this movie was a sleeper hit for 2008.
That's one hell of a sell.
Yeah, it's not like me, is it? My next movie is Crash.
I just had a gun pointed in my face.
You lower your voice.
And it was my fault because I knew it was going to happen. But if a white person sees two black men walking towards her and she turns and walks in the other direction, she's a racist, right? Well, I got scared and I didn't say anything. And 10 seconds later, I had a gun in my face. Now, I am telling you, your amigo in there is going to sell our key to one of his homies. And this time it'd be really fucking great if you acted like you actually gave a shit.
Crash is produced and directed and co-written by Paul Haggis. We've already brought him up two or three times tonight. The film features racial and social tensions in Los Angeles. A self-described passion piece for Haggis, Crash was inspired by a real-life incident in which his Porsche was carjacked in 1991 outside of a video store on Wilshire Boulevard. Several character stories interweave during 2 days in Los Angeles. A black detective is estranged from his mother, his criminal younger brother and his gang associates, a white district attorney and his irritated pampered wife, a racist white police officer who discusses his much younger, more idealistic younger partner, an African-American Hollywood director whose wife has to deal with this racist officer, a Persian immigrant father who is wary of others, and a hardworking Hispanic locksmith family man. Whew, that's a lot of people. And then they used a great, big, amazing cast of people we know and love today to fill those roles. The film deals with racism on a rather impartial approach rather than separating the characters into victims and offenders. Victims of racism are often shown to have prejudices of themselves in different contexts and different situations. Racist remarks and actions are often shown to stem from ignorance and misconception rather than malice. I am using every word I possibly can today.
Mm-hmm.
Crash was nominated for 6 Academy Awards and brought home 3 of them. Roger Ebert gave it a 4 out of 4, which is kind of amazing. And all that being said, why does this movie deserve to be here? It doesn't. Paul Haggis actually says so. Vote Slumdog instead.
way to pull out a twist ending.
Wow.
All right. So that's my 2 pitches.
One pitch. I think you're down to one pitch. Too, man.
Hey, you guys can call it however you want to see it. I'm going to go with Mando. Which one do you choose out of those 2 options?
Well, you tried to really only give us one. I'm going with the one you don't want me to go with. I'm going with Crash. I think it's a better movie. Nice. I think it had a better message overall, and it was one that was more enjoyable for me.
Okay, Aaron?
You're gonna be so mad at me. Look, I'll be perfectly honest. I know Crash gets all kinds of hate, and people constantly say it's one of the worst Best Picture winners in history, blah, 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 blah. I really enjoy the movie. I think it's trying to tell I think it does a pretty solid job of tackling real thoughts and concerns that are in society. I don't know why it gets all the hate it gets. The acting is great. I don't think it's wonderfully directed. But in terms of the story, it's a fascinating story. And I'll be honest, I was not a fan of Slumdog Millionaire. I was kind of bored.
Yeah, me too. I do like Dev Patel, but...
Yeah, that's one of those movies. It's another Roma to me. It's one where I watch it and I'm like, oh, okay. Really well done all the way around, but not where I felt entertained. I was not entertained.
All right. Well, Scott, nobody really cares, but let's hear it anyways.
I can't believe I'm actually about to do this, but Crash is a better movie. To me, it tells a more compelling story. And I've rewatched Crash more than once. I've only seen Slumdog Millionaire once. So I'm actually going to clean sweep it and say Crash.
Oof.
Wow.
Johnny, are you hurting?
Sorry, man.
I'm not really hurting. I'm surprised that I love Slumdog that much more than anything else. And that's not why I tanked Crash, because I mean I appreciated Crash for what it was. But and as much as I did enjoy it, I still think Slumdog is a better movie. But hey, of the odds, I think it's probably my favorite of the winners.
If it makes you feel better, I'm pretty sure everybody listening is on your side right now.
Yeah, we're the minority.
Yeah. Based on what I've heard with Crash, for whatever reason, that movie gets a lot of hate. All right, Scott, you're up.
Okay, my first movie is really the only movie that we need to talk about tonight.
You're supposed to sell two options.
Oh, now you're trying to bite off of my routine? I mean, that's really...
No, I'm not just saying the only movie of my movies. I'm saying the only movie of any of our movies is The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Smeagol hates Master Harnesses. Smeagol wants to see them dead. And we will. Smeagol did it once. He can do it again. It's us. Us. We must get the precious. We must get it back. Patience. Patience, my love. First, we must lead them to her.
And Return of the King was filmed in 2001, directed by Peter Jackson. And normally this is where I would go into a lot of trivia about my movie and give some Rotten Tomatoes scores and some box office totals. And I'm not going to do that. I just want to talk about the movie for its own merits. This movie was the wrap up of a trilogy that to me are the greatest three movies ever made. If you could take those movies and splice them together, you'd have one awesome 12.5 hour long movie. I think that the Academy gave Return of the King the Oscar because it was a way to reward the entire series. I honestly think that that's how they looked at it. Because to me, Return of the King isn't the best movie of the three. It's actually the second one, Two Towers.
What? Are you high?
No, I'm not.
No.
And trust me, I've seen these movies a dozen times.
How much weed is in this room right now?
That being said, this movie tells a story, the end of a story that nobody in Hollywood, I think, until the advent of modern special effects, believed could be told on film. If you've ever read the books, they're so convoluted and there's so many storylines going on at the same time.
Amen.
It almost seems like it would be impossible to put on film. And Peter Jackson did such an amazing job bringing this world to life. The three Lord of the Rings movies are by far my favorite three movies ever. This is my Star Wars. These are the movies that I go to when I need some visual chicken soup to feel better. This is what I watch. I have all the extended versions and they're amazing. If you haven't seen it, I'm not going to bore you with the plot. It's one of the only, if not the only fantasy movie ever nominated for or to win an Academy for Best Picture.
Best Picture. Well, not anymore. Shape of Water, I would say.
Okay, Shape of Water qualifies as a fantasy, but at the time it was the first to have from that genre to win Best Picture. The performances are amazing. The casting was perfect. Every single person in that movie does exactly what they were brought into this picture to do. And that's rare in a movie to see casting just so perfectly done. The only trivia I'm going to hit you with this on this one, because I found it just so fascinating, of all of the filming that they did, and they filmed all three movies together, the very first scene that they filmed was the very last scene of Return of the King. Because Peter Jackson wanted the actors at the end to look the same as they did at the beginning, and they filmed for like close to 2 years, I think. So the very first scene that they shot was Bilbo and Frodo getting on the boat to go with the elves. That was the very first scene that they filmed.
That's actually really interesting.
Yeah. So the actors got to see how it ended before they had played any of the other movies.
I'm still waiting for it to end. I'm pretty sure it's still going.
I knew that would be your complaint. Everybody seems to think it runs too long. I don't. I think that we get to see how the fellowship ties up after that moment where everybody thinks it should end, where...
Bow to no one.
Viggo Mortensen tells them, my friends, you bow to no one.
Oh, I don't think it. Scott, that's where I stopped watching the movie. Nope. I literally turned it off at that moment.
To me, the ending matters.
I stopped watching the movie at like the third or fourth fade to black.
I think it's perfect from beginning to end, and that is my first choice.
That's really your only choice.
No, I'm going to try on the next one.
All right, what's the second one?
My second choice is 2001... A Beautiful Mind.
The image of the Nobel is...
Oh, I see. So you came here to find out if I was crazy. Find out if I would screw everything up if I actually won.
Dance around the podium.
strip naked and squawk like a chicken, things of this nature.
Something like that, yes.
Would I embarrass you?
Yes, it is possible.
You see, I am crazy.
And A Beautiful Mind was directed by Ron Howard, and it tells the story of John Nash, a mathematician who, in his early days, creates a formula for modeling macroeconomics, I believe. And it's a formula that is still used today, and it revolutionized the mathematical analysis of economics. Nash was nominated for and won a Nobel Prize in mathematics for that equation at the later years of his life. And in between his creating that equation and winning the Nobel Prize, you get to see just how interesting his life was with some of the mental issues that he had to deal with. John Nash suffered from a variety of mental disorders. I believe paranoid schizophrenia was a diagnosis, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I didn't look that up. I should have. And throughout the movie, you get to see him interact with what we initially believe to be very real people, played by Ed Harris, Paul Bettany, and a few others, who, as you go through the movie, you begin to realize that John Nash is the only person who can see these people. Mm-hmm. He believes he's been recruited by the CIA to work on cryptoanalysis and cryptography by Ed Harris's character, and none of that is real. That is all in his own mind. And you see him resisting knowing that through the entire movie, which is one of the things I found most fascinating about this film. You start to get the impression that he knows what's going on about three quarters of the way in, and he just doesn't want to believe it, mm-hmm. that his mind is betraying him that badly. The performances in this movie are amazing. One of my favorite scenes comes towards the very end when he's teaching in his classroom after he's come to terms with his mental illness and he's allowed to have a job instructing young people. And two of the men from the Nobel Committee come to inform him that he's been nominated for this prize. And he grabs a passing student in the hallway and asks her if she can see the people that he's talking to. And it made me think, you know, he had to do that with every new interaction in his life. You know, anytime somebody new came into his life, he had to verify with himself that they were real. And there's a scene where he's walking and somebody asks him, you know, have they gone away? And he looks over and the three main phantom characters from his life are just walking alongside them, staring at him. And he says, no, they're always with me. And that's to recognize that you're seeing something that's not there and find a way to live with it. To me, that's an amazing story. It glossed over some of the nastier parts of John Nash's actual life, which is one of the problems I had with it. He wasn't quite as nice a guy as they portray him to be in the movie, but overall, the story worked. I thought it was really good. The only piece of trivia I'll hit you with for this one is that they filmed it in order, from beginning to end, first scene shot, last scene shot. So Russell Crowe could portray that slow devolution of his mind through the early part of the movie. They thought that the only way he would really be able to get into that was by filming it sequentially, which I found really fascinating. Not a lot of directors do that. They jump mm-hmm. around. This one was filmed straight through beginning to end, which I found fascinating. So that is my second one, Beautiful Mind. So moving on to the votes, Aaron, I don't think you've had a chance to go first, so hit me.
That's a movie that Russell Crowe should have won the Oscar for. Plain and simple, Beautiful Mind. He should have won the Oscar for it. He was robbed. Call 911. If that's, you know, still, if that was a thing back then.
I happen to agree with you. He was amazing in that film.
He's 100% one. And it's so polar opposite from Gladiator.
Yes.
I mean, completely opposite from Gladiator. It's fantastic. But Return of the King, yeah, everything you already said. Closing chapter, and it kind of sealed the deal. But I judge everything by that one film. And as a film, it still was better than A Beautiful Mind. To me.
It's A Beautiful Mind?
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, Return of the King.
Yeah, Beautiful right. Mind. Let's just shake it up. Let's be different.
Let's just say exactly the opposite of what you think.
Return of the King.
Return of the King. Thank you very much. John, your vote.
No pomps, no circumstance. Return of the King. That's all we need to know.
Amanda, your worthless, unnecessary vote now?
Well, I would have definitely shaken it up a little bit because I would have chosen A Beautiful Mind. As much as I do like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I think it would be really unfair to give Return of the King the best picture out of the three of them. I don't think that it's the best one, and I don't think that it's better than A Beautiful Mind. I do respect everything that Peter Jackson did to make that story come alive, because it truly took a remarkable talent to get there, like, especially from having to go through the books. I am not even going to read them, so I can't even imagine what he went through to put it onto film. But I really don't think that the message is as strong in that as it is for A Beautiful Mind, and I'm definitely one of those people who your film has to be more about the craft. It encompasses not only the craft, but also the story. And if you don't have a good story, you don't have a good movie. And I think there is a good movie with Lord of the Rings, but I think that if you take just that one piece of the movie, you're missing so much else that I can't grant necessarily that being the best out of our choices here, because it relies so much on the context of the other films, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
No, it makes sense.
And A Beautiful Mind did something that is so rarely ever done, which is to show that people who have a mental illness can still be quote-unquote normal human beings. You can still fulfill a life. You can still do what you want to do. You can still be brilliant. You are not your mental illness. You just have a mental illness. And I think that's something that is just remarkable about A Beautiful Mind, that they did that.
All right, Return of the King moves on. But before we move on to our semifinals, I just want to, real quick, the two movies that didn't make it are Chicago, which, okay, no big surprise there, I don't think, and No Country for Old Men, which a lot of people love. I'm just kind of curious, is there any particular reason why someone didn't put that on there? Like, was it a debate for anybody, or is it just didn't work for you? I'll give you my short answer is, I can't stand the last 20 minutes of that movie, so therefore it removes it from consideration for me.
You're talking about Chicago?
No, No Country for Old Men.
No Country for
Old Men. I actually like Chicago more than I like No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men was good. I liked it. It was too quirky for me to be a best picture. I mean, it just, there were a lot of parts in that movie that really worked, and then there was a really, really big part for me that didn't. So that's, I didn't even consider it. And Chicago, I wasn't really a huge fan.
Chicago is not something I would have picked, and for No Country for Old Men, it was a movie that, though I've seen it, I can't remember what happened in it, and I don't remember enjoying it, and I can barely remember staying awake for it.
No Country for Old Men for you, Amanda? Did you?
Western.
Okay. All right. Well, we can
you
move on.
You should know better, man.
She said that like I should. All right, let's go to Whole North, and this is our semifinals. We go from The Departed to The Hurt Locker. That's what we have, the Departed, Hurt Locker. We're going to start with John and Scott first, because they are the whole South. So, John, what's your vote between those two? We don't need a whole big thing. Just kind of get into it. What do you got?
Yeah, short and sweet. Departed.
Scott?
Ooh, flipping the coin. Hurt Locker.
Amanda?
Hurt Locker.
You're picking against yourself.
I don't care. I would have picked Hurt Locker if I could have.
Oh.
Me too. So I get it.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I'm going with the... God, that's on me, isn't it?
You just started the first word, which can apply to both movies.
I know. You like that? You're welcome. You're welcome. I got to go to Departed. I really do. I got to go to Departed. I think Departed is probably a more entertaining film than The Hurt Locker. I love Hurt Locker, but let's see what the listeners thought.
I already know.
The Departed.
Yeah.
Bleh.
The Departed.
Listeners, you're wrong.
Okay. So The Departed moves on to the next round. And let's see. Ho South. Now we have Crash versus Return of the King. All right, Amanda, you and I go first on this one.
You can go first. I need to think.
Return of the King. I don't think it's a big stretch for me, personally.
It's not that I really do like the movie. It's just hard to qualify it as the best out of all of these when it's not, that single one is not a complete movie.
I understand.
Ugh.
I don't believe in rewarding things based on a body of work either. So it's like.
Also, like, I'm sorry, Frodo, are you really that stupid that Samwise had to do everything for him?
That's not entirely accurate, but that's okay.
He literally carried him up. 100%
accurate.
He didn't do everything.
What did Frodo do exactly?
He had to feed him. He brought him sandwiches because he couldn't even feed himself.
I'm not going to get into a nerd fight with you guys. I'm not going to get into a nerd fight with you guys.
Tolkien actually says it's Samwise's story. It's not Frodo's story.
That's true.
Return of the King is more Sam's story.
No, the whole story is actually more Sam's story. No, that I don't buy. Tolkien said that. That's
No, that's on him. I disagree.
Oh, that's on him.
I really hate this decision. The nerd in me wants to say Return of the King because I think Lord of the Rings as a completion deserves it. But one single movie is like...
You gotta go with what you gotta go with. It's your reasoning. I won't fault you unless you're wrong.
Oh my God, I'm so stubborn. I'm gonna not be stubborn for a second, and I'm gonna say Return of the King.
All right, John?
Return of the King.
Yeah, you know what my vote's gonna be.
That was gonna be your vote from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, before we even started, I think it already had it. Yep. All right, now we go to the finals. This is where it gets interesting because we have the biggest films, actually, I would say, in here. And I'm still debating Departed versus Hurt Locker, but this is what we have.
You should have picked Hurt Locker.
We have The Departed, and we have Return of the King. What do we have? Scott, go ahead, because I already know what you're going
to
pick.
Oh, this is not even a choice. It's obviously Return of the King.
I would disagree with that.
No, for me, it's not a choice.
All right. John, what do you got?
This is not even a choice. No, I'm kidding. The Departed.
Amanda.
Hurt Locker. Departed.
Oh. Oh, sweetness.
Save me, man. You got to save me from these two.
Son of a bitch.
This is where I removed my stubbornness.
No, I was really, really.
Put it back in.
Really all ready to just drop mine and then just walk away because I thought it would be 3-1.
Nobody wants to hear you blowing the mic.
I don't like how the last movie ends, and it pisses me off.
You mean which ending? Because there's like 5 alternative endings.
Yes, and I did read the books, by the way. So, or book. I read it when it was a book. Sorry, John. Were you starting to say something?
I was going to say, do you mean the actual like different alternative endings, or do you mean like one of the 15 Fade to Blacks?
No, yes. No, see, here's the thing. Okay, so Best Picture winner is Return of the King, and it's the theatrical version. Now, the theatrical version is not as good as the extended version by a mile. Mm-hmm. So I am saying that I don't like how it ended. It picked the wrong place to end, and that last 20 minutes of ending kills a lot of the film for me, personally. I literally do stop it every time they bow. That's when I stop the movie. Departed, I watched to the end. So I'm going Departed.
You guys are so wrong.
Maybe. But
I respect your choice.
Wait, I don't think you do.
As long as it may be.
Does the theatrical version have all of the extra fades?
I think it has one less.
Yes.
One less?
Yeah. I think there's one part that's in the extended version that's not in the theatrical version.
No, the ending is almost as long.
I've never been so mad at a movie as I was at that one when it came to those stupid Fade to Blacks because by it was like that was still a 3-hour movie and that was back when I drank soda and not only did I drink soda but I got the great big urinal cup that like if I really wanted to I could have just refilled the cup but you know then I would have gone to jail so somebody would have called somebody on me so I couldn't do that. And after about the fifth or sixth Fade to Black, I was like, I have to pee, and it's going to kill me.
All right, I'm going to explain something here.
Well, hang on. I just want to tell you, if Hurt Locker would have made it, I would have picked Hurt Locker, too.
Yeah, I would have picked Return Hurt Locker.
So either way, your movie's so probably
cool. Why didn't you just pick Hurt Locker to go to the end?
I like The Departed more. I think Hurt Locker is a better movie, but I believe that The Departed is a more enjoyable film. And that's what I go with Best Picture.
Scotch and I are both right. mad at you.
I'm just going to explain this reason why I'm okay with the ending for Return of the King. I feel like I have to justify
which
that.
Which one, man? Seriously, there are 5 or 6 or I don't even know the number because there's so many.
That movie,
and it's unnecessary.
That movie series is the only movie series that I can think of. And yes, I'm including Indiana Jones and Star Wars and all the other big extended series.
Slow down there.
Where I became really emotionally connected to all of the characters.
I get that.
And the reason that I didn't want that movie to end is because it was the last time we were ever going to get to see those characters together, all of them.
Can I ask you a question, a legitimate question?
Sure.
If you just take that last movie, do you have any emotional attachment to anyone?
By the end of the movie, yes.
The only time I get an attachment is when Samwise literally picks him up and carries him.
I have some issues with the very end, but nobody, fans, people are listening are going to yell at me if I do it.
I kind of liked that.
It got kind of hokey. I can't, but I'll carry you. And I'm like, whoa, easy killer. Easy. That was over the top. It was a little vaudeville.
I loved every second of it.
I liked that.
I love the series. I really do, man. But I just.
No, I know. I get it.
Leonardo DiCaprio is fantastic in The Departed. Mark Wahlberg is never good in anything, and he's great in that movie.
I like Marky Mark. Don't judge him.
He's always the guy who plays Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, that's true. Also, what's interesting for Mark Wahlberg is that his past came into play when he was trying to determine how he was going to play his character, because he's been...
He's a douche in his past?
In his past, he was arrested a lot, and he was also able to take his parents' reactions to him being arrested and going through all of that and use it for the movie.
They were good performances. I'm not saying they weren't good performances. Departed is some of the most amazing acting I've seen on screen.
I love Lord of the Rings. But you know what? Regardless of what you think, the winner of the whole movie Battle Royale. Let me try it again.
I won't say I did that on purpose, but I might have.
The winner of the whole movie Battle Royale is The Departed.
The Hurt Locker.
The Departed.
The Hurt Locker.
The Departed.
The Hurt Locker.
Y'all are both wrong.
If this will make you feel a little bit better, we do have the whole listener choice. When the Facebook, we always put in the Facebook group and say, here are the movies we're going to do for the movie Battle Royale. You choose. And you know what the listeners picked?
Yes, by all means, tell me, Aaron.
The Departed.
No, they didn't.
They paid Return of the King.
Also, Scott cheated because he put his own vote in on the Facebook poll. You can't do that.
Okay, subtract one from that total, and who still wins?
The Departed.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
I also don't know. Is it actually fair to use the poll listener to make the tiebreaker? Because they're not choosing between the two movies. They're choosing between all of the movies. So a lot of the votes were people saying Departed is the best out of all of them. Or
yeah, it's fair. I've done math. It's 100% fair. Yeah. Well, guess what?
I think it's very fair.
I'm going to put a poll in the group that says, after this episode release, which one do you pick?
Oh, I'm going to tell you a secret. I ain't going to care.
I don't care. I'm still going to do it.
All right. So thank you guys for playing. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Now, before we close the show out, any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about you want to mention? I do want to say I saw Happy Death Day 2, and... that's a really funny hour, and then I think it just collapses. So it was like a 5 for me. Could have done better. Anything, anybody else have anything?
I have one streaming on Netflix. It's a movie called The Yellowbirds with Jennifer Aniston is the only one that I can think of.
Okay.
It's a movie about the Iraq War, and it's actually interesting.
I interviewed the director a while back. Yeah. Go find that in the feed.
Yeah. I just watched it for the first time, and it was not what I expected it to be, and it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I saw a movie on Netflix as well and wrote a review if you feel like reading, but it's called Paddleton.
I come to podcasts so I don't have to read, Amanda.
Well, fine. Anyway, I think that it's probably going to be the best bromance movie that you're going to see all year. It is a really great movie about two neighbors. One of them has cancer and the other one is, as they say, the other guy. And he's asking his friend to come along on this journey of not only like an emotional journey of his last days as he asks his friend to help him with this, but also their journey of friendship and how close their brotherhood actually is. It's really beautiful. It's from the Duplass brothers, but it stars Mark and it also has Ray Romano. It's really great. Ray Romano does his best Romano with dramedy.
He's a great actor. He really is. Great, but he's a really good actor.
When
he's
it comes good. To drama mm-hmm. and comedy, he knows how to hit those good points where it's a little bit of both. So it's a really good movie. I liked it a lot and I would say that it's worth catching it.
I've got nothing. I actually spent all weekend working on artwork, so I unfortunately did not have time to go see anything fun and exciting this weekend.
I'm so proud of you for doing your art.
Good job, buddy.
Well done, sir.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, we do have an email. I want to read this. So this is actually kind of nice. This is from Mike Francis. He took the time to write a nice long email.
Aww. I want
to
read it. It
says, "Hey hoes, I have been a listener for several years, but started to lose interest after the founding members started to break away. It gets better. the show just seemed better to me with 4 voices/personalities. So thank you very much for bringing Amanda on board. Hello, hello." He spelled that out. I love her energy, serious opinions, and goofy banter. They are all great matches to Aaron's and John's. I'm also liking the show's new music, and of course, I've missed the outtakes. I know they're a serious pain for you, but I really enjoy them, and they set you guys and gal apart from any other podcast that, in theory, might be out there. I won't take up any more of your time, but I wanted to write in and say I appreciate all the content over the years, that Amanda seems to be fitting in really well, and that the last few episodes have been especially great. Thank you for all the hard work, Mike Francis.
That's super sweet. And he acknowledges all the time that you spend editing.
Well, that's very nice. He said these nice things about you and you bring it back to me. That's a nice suck up.
Well, I feel like it's a little like narcissistic if I'm like, wow, thanks for telling me I'm awesome.
And that stopped you. Why?
Anyway, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, thanks, Scott, for coming by, man. I hope you had fun.
Hey, no problem. I always have fun when I'm on the show. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a very good time.
I'm really, really, really sad for you because when you listen to this, it's just going to be heartbreak.
I'm already heartbroken, but I'm not.
And you know how it ends. It's like watching Sixth Sense and somebody told you that Bruce Willis was dead the whole time. Spoiler alert.
No, it's not like that because I'm sitting here talking to three people who are wrong, who are going to air this out to a whole audience full of people who got it right. So I'm good.
Not everybody loves Lord of the Rings, believe it or not.
Which one won again on the listener poll?
Yeah. Hey, Scott, if it makes you feel better.
The Departed.
We're all wrong because The Hurt Locker never made it to finals.
I got to say, I would have picked The Hurt Locker as my second movie if it had been available to me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, look, that's all fine and dandy, but I would have picked it myself if Aaron didn't go, oh, look, I screwed up. I know you got the wrong movie. That's my bad, but you can't have it.
What's funny is that in the email, he tells Scott.
I made a mistake and had the aughts wrong and actually had American Beauty in there, which was in our last one last year where we did the 90s. It's actually American Beauty was actually from 99 and I made a mistake.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but when I read your email and I saw the list, I'm thinking to myself, Hurt Locker is supposed to be on the list somewhere. I'm supposed to be picking first. Did I miss it?
No, I'll be honest with you. It would have been my first choice or first round anyway. So
I would also, can we fact check Scott? Because I feel like he said 2001 or 2002 for well, 2001 for.
He said it filmed in 2001. It released in 2003.
No, I said 2003 for Return of the King.
No, you said 2001.
You said 2001 for both.
You said it filmed in
2001 for Beautiful Mind. I know. So I think that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? We like to correct it as we end the show.
Return of the King was filmed in 2003, people.
And it lost in 2019. So congratulations. And you can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at arjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk, me and my other podcast, Smirk, and the Blacklist Exposed. Amanda's also on Veronica Marshmallows, I'm sorry. And also, before we cut out, it's very important, a long time, she's been on the show many times, and she's also on Veronica's Marshmallows, Angela Wallach. She had a beautiful baby boy, so congratulations to Angela.
Congratulations to the Wallachs.
Now we're going
to
test her and see if she still listens to podcasts in her hospital bed. It's very
important.
She
will never have time again.
Yes, she will.
She's out of the hospital.
That's why she's never going to have time. In the hospital, she's good. Her time, her free time just went away.
She should really start thinking about adoption. Okay, so remember the next time you head to a theater. Just kidding. Buy popcorn. All right, Johnny, you ready? You're already recording, so we're good to go, right?
Yeah, I'm good to go. We can start recording. Okay. I can listen to Amanda say hello, hello, or you know.
No, we're good.
Scott, go.
I can do that some more if you want.
Make sure it doesn't clang.
I am Scott Cogarol. I'm here to talk about everything. Is there oxygen in this room?
Now I kind of feel like I should leave.
Wow. He's just trying to make sure.
Hello, Amanda. I'm going to take on the oxygen too.
What?
Wow.
I'm going to do what? Number? What were you talking about?
He said number two.
So I was like, what?
Amanda's going to go number two. By the way, this is too hot. Shit.
Aaron's stripping.
Are you still there, John?
God, no, I do.
I'm still here.
He was watching you take your clothes off.
Yeah. Hey.
I'm all excited. I'm like, ooh. Hey.
Yeah, John got awfully quiet.
Dollar bills now. Woo. John's the only person I can see is Aaron. This is like
my shirt's off, John. This is next.
Oh, God. I'm out.
Please zip that back up. Don't leave it
undone. Don't leave it undone. How dare you? I can barely hear you guys.
Well, man, it's a bit of a cackle. Are we louder than normal or something or what?
I have a bit of a cackle.
I don't think so. I just think that the volume was up pretty high and I'm going deaf.
How is you have a cackle offensive?
Because I'm the only one who gets to make fun of my laugh.
That's still not offensive. Since when? That means you're sensitive. That doesn't mean that it's offensive.
It's still, it is. You're like judging the way I laugh.
Well. No, I mean if there's like you have the cackle of a haunted crow, that's offensive to crows. Wow.
You just need to have a shut the fuck up button for me.
No, so if like I put my hand up or I go like this, that means wrap it up. Roger. Amanda knows this because it's like wrap it up. Wrap it up.
So you mean every time you've done that while I've been down here, I was supposed to stop?
That's
talking?
What it meant. No. Yeah. Every
those
time.
Hand signals are like military notions.
It's
like,
supposed
yeah,
to be.
You know what's funny is that every time he's done that, I've the one that shut up because and for no good reason because Amanda's still talking and he does the whole thing. I'm like, what? What's going on?
All right, here we go.
Ooh, let me turn that off.
Oh, yeah. Let's turn the.
Ooh, yeah. Phone volume. Hang on.
Sorry. Right, I'm good.
No, that's just like the first time, right?
I usually have it off.
I get it. You don't do this every week.
It always feels like the first time.
Yeah.
It's a little tight.
I can hear me echoing.
Oh, wow. I'm glad I'm the only one that heard that.
That's not, there's no echo.
Nope,
it's just
you're
reverb.
You're the only one that heard that.
Sorry.